Good morning, everybody. Matt Babala here with you until 5 a.m. on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, hanging out with you till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone line. It's also the text line, so jump in and participate throughout the evening. We'd love to have you along for the ride. Okay, first, I don't know if the guys mentioned it, so I want to make sure that we know that that news brought, that Roger just brought us, was sponsored by the North Shore Wine and Spirits Festival.com. North Shore Wine and Spirits Festival.com. Thank you very much for your support. Okay, Roger, back to the news. So yes, you said Monday, that's the day to paint.
Yeah.
So I got
a high of about 58.
So here's the thing.
Sunny. Yeah.
Tommy and I started painting the porch. We have this, so about 3 years ago, we got a new siding and a new roof.
Okay.
And they took down all the shutters that were around the windows. And I said, Tommy and I will repaint those and we'll put them up. We're not going to pay someone to do that. And then we had somebody come out and give us an estimate to repaint the shutters, because, of course, we're never going to get that done. And paint. So our porch, we have this just a long porch in front of the house. It's from side to side, from the garage to the end of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, one of those cement slabs that's, I don't know, maybe 3 feet in front. You can, you know, you can walk there, you can hang plants, and then it's got poles, and it's got a railing, and it's got all those little spindles.
Right, I remember you talking about the spindles, that you were wanting to paint those.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of wood.
Yeah.
And when we redid the house with the siding, redid all the, I don't know, what is it, the soffits and the gutters and mm-hmm. the trim,
mm-hmm.
it had been beige, which we never loved, so we had it redone in white, which I just feel like makes things pop a little better, right?
Okay, sure.
But the porch, the wood is beige, so it didn't really go anymore.
Yeah.
We always wanted to repaint that. Well, when we got an estimate, it was kind of high, and we're like, I don't really want to spend that much on that. And then we never got around to it, and then blah, blah, blah. And finally, all right, Tommy and I are going to paint this thing.
All right.
So a few weeks ago, I forget which Bears game it was. The Bears had a noon 3 o'clock game. It was when the Bears had the 3 o'clock game. So maybe it was their second week of the year. I'm not sure. But it was a really nice day. I'm like, I'm going to get out there at 10, finish by 3, mm-hmm. watch that Bears game. Well, 3 o'clock rolled around. I had about a third of the porch done, because those spindles take forever.
Yep.
And this is just coat one.
Oh, no.
So that was like 3 weeks ago ish or more. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't really been a lot of nice weather since, because there's so much rain. So we have half the porch painted. Wow. So now it's starting to look like some weird Halloween decoration.
Good timing.
Yes. and so I'm writing it off as that, but I'm trying to figure out, you know, this afternoon I wanted to get out there. It was supposed to be a little bit sunny, then it would rain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this weekend, it's Credio weekend, and Monday's supposed to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had the conversation tonight, thinking about, all right, at noon on Monday, do I just get Tommy out of school
and bring him home
to paint? Now, I know that that is not what I should be doing,
no.
But don't you believe sometimes the life lessons and the bonding experience with Dad is more important than 3 hours of schooling?
No.
And then it's like, well, you know, Anna wanted to help, too. So maybe I just leave Michael at school.
Oh.
As long as one of them is there, we're represented, and that's okay.
Maybe he can go to everyone's classes and make believe he's them.
Well, he'll at least bring home all the homework.
Oh, there you go. That's all you need.
So there's that.
It's, you know what? Family emergency. Those two words did great for little notes coming from parents or phone calls to get a kid out of class.
I just, what's the emergency? This porch needs to get painted. That's what it's saying outside.
And that you're old and can't do it by yourself.
Yes, that's true. And that's true. Maybe I should just embrace the oldness and start taking advantage of it, huh?
I think so.
I'm sorry. I'll die. I'll fall off the ladder and die. I need them home.
I need him to hold the ladder so I don't fall.
Yeah, because I got to get on that second step to get up there.
Yeah, right.
And that gets a little woozy. So I am debating. I think I'm going to talk about, what do you guys have on Monday? What's going on in the afternoon?
Yeah, right.
I'm going to feel it out.
It has to be important. Didn't you have all your tests last week?
Yeah. I might just go at noon and say, come on, we got painting to do.
Now, here's another suggestion.
Okay.
And, of course, this is like being way too dang logical. Oh. You could get big sheets of plastic. Hang them from the top of the porch down and cover the porch in to keep it dry and away from the windy elements. And you could sit in the porch and paint that way with a little, you know, plastic protection.
Yeah, it's not so much that it's been cold. It's more that it's been so rainy and the wood's been wet so often.
Mm.
And here's the thing, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
I go put up plastic. We don't finish. The plastic's there. I'm getting yelled at about that. It's kind of an eyesore. You know, you got
but it works into
by.
Halloween.
It does, too.
Because then you could put the scary lights behind it and the shadows and great Halloween decoration.
This is all true.
It'll come down by Christmas, maybe.
Maybe. Or what'll happen is we'll get a good freeze, and then it's, like, stuck to the gutter. And, I'm sorry. That'll come down in the spring. It'll be fine. This is good. You know what? We don't have to insulate the windows this time.
No.
We got this on the porch. It's,
yeah.
like, it's really like an all-seasons room now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
See how that goes over. All right. So what is the update on...
Mega Millions.
Yes. Which, by the way, you sent me a message on Facebook earlier. Did you get our tickets?
Yeah.
I was then going to text you and just say, hey, how much should we all go in on? I never even ended up buying a freaking ticket.
Oh, you're kidding.
I meant to on the way home. I forgot. And then I'm in bed taking my nap. I'm like, oh, my God. So I text Jess. I'm like, Jess, on your way home, you got to buy the lottery tickets.
Yeah.
She said, okay. She got there too late. It was already closed.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But you know, this is how I justified it. I haven't bought a lottery ticket in decades.
Okay.
Why now?
Because
it's always some little town of 12 people at a little gas station convenience store in between another town of 5 people.
Not always.
Yes, it is. It's never in the big city. I've got a place 2 blocks from us, a gas station convenience store.
Uh-huh.
I have never... Ever. And we've lived there 36 years. I have never seen them post anything in that convenience store
that means
that anyone
due.
Won anything
they're
there.
They're due, Roger.
Oh, they're not due, please.
All right, well, let me ask you this first.
It's a one in a
first,
trillion,
it is.
Billion
I
chance.
I know, but you just take the one chance. Throw in $2.
Oh,
what do we know yet if anybody won?
We have not gotten...
How do they not know that?
They're still checking the records. We do know that
you
California...
You can't have to check the records. It's all computerized.
I know, but they're checking the computers. I don't know what the
that
problem
doesn't make
is.
Any
I don't work for them. So here's California tweeted out that nobody won in that state, but they had one ticket sold. What did she do here?
Oh, Jess bought us each a scratch off because she couldn't buy us actual tickets.
Oh, so I have to scratch off the stars?
We'll have to read this during the
okay, yeah, okay.
All
right.
Here. I'm not sure if you scratch.
Ooh, if I get 10 words, I could wow, we're going to Disney World. Okay.
Oh, you can win up to $50,000.
Yeah, I know. She's so nice. So, California, somebody in Morgan Hill, California, wherever that is, won, matched 5 of 6 numbers. I have no idea what that gets them. I do know that somebody...
Gets you like $1 million, I think.
Yeah, somebody matched...
Somebody won
6 numbers,
3
million,
last week, right,
the last time. They matched 6 numbers, but not the Powerball.
So
they got 3 million.
There was 900 million on the line.
No, it was 1 billion
okay, so
by the time they drew it.
Right. If there was a billion on the line
mm-hmm.
and you missed by 1 and you get $3 million, would you be like, I can't believe I won $3 million. This is the greatest day of my life? Or would you be like, I cannot believe I missed by 1 ball?
I would have said, I can't believe I missed by 1 ball after somebody took the paddles to my heart.
Yeah.
And then I would have said, woohoo, 3 million.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 million would still do you well.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh,
no doubt.
Hello. Yeah.
No doubt.
Now, if nobody matches, Tuesday's jackpot.
They already have an estimate on it?
Yep.
Okay.
$1.6 billion.
That will tie the all-time record
yes,
set
will.
By Powerball in 2016.
Yep. $1.6 billion.
Okay. If it rolls over, we're buying. Now, I'm going to make a wager with you, though, Roger.
Uh-oh. What?
Since we didn't spend money on the Powerball tonight, we got a little cash to spend.
Yeah.
So, if there is a winner tonight,
okay,
and we can even roll this over to next week, and if there's a winner tonight, or on Wednesday, or next Friday night,
mm-hmm.
let's wager, you said it's always from some tiny little town.
Yeah.
So, let's put $1
okay.
on
mm-hmm.
the over-under on the size of the town. I will give you... that I will bet the winning ticket is sold in a town with a population of 5,000 or more. You take 5,000 or less.
5,000 is still kind of small. All right, I'll take 5,000 or less.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you 7,000 if you want. I think the town I live in West Dundee
is 5,000 is fine. 7,000, you're getting into a metropolis now.
Okay. What's the sweet spot there, Roger? About 6,5800?
Yeah, 6,250.
Like, yeah, 6,250.
Wait a minute. Speaking of metropolis, hold on a second. Hold on. Let's. I just got
just
an idea.
$1. You got to write this down. If the winning Powerball or Mega Millions ticket is sold in a hamlet with less than 6,250 residents, Roger wins $1.
Let's give an exact figure. I said Metropolis.
Okay.
The population of Metropolis, Illinois, home of Superman, is 6,133. Anything right below that.
So I'm going to round it up to 6,250, like we
okay
just said.
All right.
Below that, you win. Above that, I win.
Okay. Boom. For a whole dollar.
Love it.
Big-time gambling.
Big-timer. All right. So we have some texters about the painting job. Oh. 412, are you using special paint for the siding? You will be painting for years if you don't. P.S. Wise and Tommy up now in painting. They have outside lights. Well, A, it's been wet all day. Yeah. B, we're not painting the siding. We're painting the wood. The wood on the porch, the railings, the
soffit.
No, the soffit underneath is wood. Mm-hmm. And the railing and the support poles, I guess, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And those spindles that take forever. 440 writes, Matt, even though I'm listening to you in Ohio, and I normally wait until Halloween, in your honor, I'm going to begin my snow dance early, being that I am in good stead with the Fugawi Indian tribe.
Look at you.
So wait, snow dance to stop the snow, right? Because
right,
I don't need the snow just yet.
We're already predicting that it may be mixed in with the rain.
Yeah. Ugh.
See, and that's what they're talking about. It's not like suddenly it's raining, then suddenly it's snowing. It's going to be a wet,
slushy mix.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
And it's not going to be a lot.
It's the worst of both worlds, really.
And it may pass us by, too. They're only predicting about a 20-25% chance.
Right, that's good. Matt. But you know what? It's only October 20th. We've already had a month, really, of below average temps, haven't we?
Yes.
I mean, it's been a kind of a crappy month. I hope the kids at least get a nice Halloween. Yes, Jessica, what would you like to say?
Is this texter being sarcastic?
Well, I don't know which one you're looking at.
From Ohio.
Oh, from about the
snow dance.
Well, I don't know. I just read that on the air. I don't know.
I know.
I'm assuming they're doing a snow dance to keep it off.
To I hope so.
Keep the snow away because they want Halloween to be good for them.
I hope they send a follow-up text confirming.
That's interesting. So you think it's a he, and because I guess it's a dance, I'm assuming it's a she. Because I don't think guys do snow dances. 870 says, painting the porch is the city version of farm kids getting out of school for harvest time. I agree.
Ooh,
yes.
There's
I don't
a good
have a farm,
choice.
But
yeah.
I, you know, hey, it's fall. We got to paint the porch. Kids got to stay out of school for that.
I bet Max and Orion did that all the time.
Had to leave school for, no, not Max.
Why not?
You know Max's claim to fame?
What? No.
Max Armstrong, longtime farm broadcaster here at WGN.
Yeah, I know longtime. Yeah,
never,
he's a rascal.
Never once in his life missed a day of school.
Oh,
not
that's
even
once.
I'm dead serious.
That's, you're kidding.
Absolutely true.
What, did he have like school held out in the field one day so they could all work and learn some kind of lesson?
I don't know. I don't know. Did Max grow up on a farm?
I thought he did.
I don't know. He might have.
I thought his dad, he always talking about the tractor that his dad had,
his
I thought.
Dad, but did his dad, like, maybe his dad sold tractors, worked on tractors? Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that, but I do know. I heard Max say it over the years.
Mm.
Max never once missed a day of school. At least he was never sick. And I assume assume you wouldn't claim I never missed a day of school if you were getting pulled out to go harvest and stuff. I think he was there every single day of his life. Now, maybe he left early. I don't know if there's some, you know, caveats there.
Or maybe he got up early, worked the farm, and then went
to
school. Sure.
I think that's
possible. I know a lot of farm kids did that. My wife has a lot of family that still own farms out near Galesburg. And I've heard stories.
Our Ohio follow-up is, the Indians never dance to keep the rain away, and my title is Mr. Thank you very much.
There you go.
So I'm so confused, though, if he's saying the Indians never dance to keep the rain away. Does that mean he's doing a dance to bring more snow? Stop dancing! Stop dancing! You're not in rhythm anyways.
Oh, my God.
773 is yelling at me, we're Chicagoans, deal with it. Canada has already been snowed in. Well, if I wanted snow already, I would live in Canada.
You could go to Denver.
Chicago.
I got friends in Denver who've had snow.
I'm sorry.
Montana's had snow.
October 20th, isn't that a little bit early?
No.
Can't we all say,
I think the first snows have been like the middle of October we've had in the Chicago area.
Maybe dustings. And I know that's all that's expected, but come on. Nobody's going, yeah, let's bring it on now. You don't want snow on the ground when the kids are trick-or-treating.
We've had snow on the ground when they've been trick-or-treating.
I know, and it's miserable. Nobody wants that.
Well, of course. Nobody said they wanted it, but people do it. I mean, it happens.
Well, everything happens.
Well, yeah, so why are you complaining that it's too early for snow and nobody wants it for Halloween?
Because I think I'm correct on both counts. It's too early. Nobody wants it for Halloween.
I don't want snow on Halloween because
thank you, Jess.
I'm wearing a dress as part of my Halloween costume, and I don't want it to snow. It'll be too cold.
I agree.
Sorry. I am kind of a Chicagoan, but I am a Chicagoan.
But I mean, I'm thinking of all the little kids in the neighborhoods that got to go out in these costumes. Now, if you got one of those big, fuzzy, warm costumes, then you're fine. But the poor parents that are dragging them around are miserable. That ain't fun. 847 says, I got married on October 20th. It snowed that day in 1989. And I bet you thought, October 20th, nice fall, crisp day, it'll be great. The leaves are changing, and said snow. Very frustrating. 312-981-7200 is the number. We got a lot of fun stuff to do tonight, and then we're going to talk some serious stuff, too. So you all that yell at me when we get too serious on the show, I'm sorry, but we are going to do a little bit tonight. But first, coming up after the 1:30 news, we have Dr. Ashley Donnelly with us. She is a professor. I think, is she at Ball State, Jess? She's either at Ball State or at Indiana. I can't remember which. I'll figure it out. But she's going to talk to us about scary movies for Halloween. New Halloween movie came out this weekend. And then at 2 o'clock, our friend Kim Belwack, a reporter here in Chicago, has talked to us about death penalty and stuff before. We're going to talk to her about the governor's race, about the mayoral race. Chance the Rapper came out and endorsed somebody who I hadn't even heard of who's running this week. So that's interesting. So there's a lot of interesting things about all of that. Later in the show, we're going to talk about the latest news out of Saudi Arabia and the story it took them 2 weeks to come up with. And also, Raj, I want to talk about Sears finally filing for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Which you would think Sears had done that several times already because every year they close. And I don't even know how they have any stores left because I swear every 6 months you're reading a story about how Sears is closing another 100 stores.
Yeah.
They must have started out with like 4,000.
Well, and the weird thing about it is they're filing for bankruptcy, but they're not closing all their stores.
They're just doing the protection and trying to reorganize.
Yeah, they're closing about 100 and some odd. And there's still going to be some stores that are going to be open because when you file for bankruptcy, that's basically reorganization. It's like you can't meet your debts. It's like what regular people do. You get to the point where you just can't pay your debts and you take the legal out of responsibility and you either refinance your debts or, and there's Chapter 11 and a Chapter, I want to say 7 maybe, but there's two ways that either all the debts are forgiven and
yeah.
And your credit rating is in the, you know,
toilet.
The gutter, toilet, or you renegotiate and you pay back some
right.
And you save your credit rating or something like that.
Right,
so,
right.
And I'm not a business fine, as we all know by my savings account, I am not a business genius, but I think what they're doing is they're going into a reorganization, probably looking for a buyer to take over the operation and then reemerged in a new form.
So they're going through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw in one of the stories that they're not going to do the Wish book this year, which they had brought back a couple of years ago, I think, the old Wish Sears
yeah.
Wish book that we used to get every Christmas. So
right.
Later in the show, I want us to reminisce a little bit about
okay.
that and as kids and getting that book and what that meant to us
yeah.
every year around Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So lots to do. Stay with us. Mm-hmm. 312-981-7200. News is next on 720 WGN. Getting yelled at by the texters. 815 writes, I had to get up out of bed to get my darn phone just to text you. You were. Quit your belly aching. Snow is great, fun, fresh. We've had a couple of snow dusting runs on Halloween. Blah, blah, blah. I'm glad I made you get out of bed if you want snow by Halloween. You deserve to be out of bed. Come on. You can wait till November 1st?
No.
Yeah. Oh, Roger, you're
Halloween's over November
too?
1st.
I know.
If I could get
so
a light
snow,
dusting of snow for Halloween, that would be cool.
No, it would not.
I don't want it like some Halloweens I went out, we took the kids out. It was like...
Yeah, the only reason you're rooting for this is because you don't have kids. What about the grandgirls? You want them to go slip on some ice with their cute Halloween costumes on?
They won't.
Is that what you want?
No.
Why?
Why don't I want them slipping?
Why don't you think that'll happen if there's snow?
Because they're not going to be slipping.
Oh, please.
That's spikes in their boots.
We'll put on the chains. It'll be fine.
They've winterized.
Oh, gosh. It's 1:30 in the morning. Let's check the news headlines. Here's Roger Badish. I told Jess to play this. This is Tubular Bells, and I can't remember if this is from Halloween or is this from The Exorcist.
I think it might have been used for one of the movies.
No, it's definitely from one of the movies.
Okay.
I can't remember if it's from
originally
Halloween or The Exorcist.
It wasn't. He came out with this album.
Seriously? Are you sure?
I bought the album.
I know,
I
but
had
you
it.
Sure it wasn't around the time of a movie?
I don't think it was. Because the guy plays every instrument. This thing goes for two sides.
This song?
This song.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I'm telling you. I bet it was written for a movie. Jesse, got to look that up for us. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Maybe our guest will know the answer. I won't put her on the spot, though. Dr. Ashley Donnelly is a telecommunications professor at Ball State University. She was kind enough to stay up really late with us and join us on the phone. Hey, Dr. Donnelly, how are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
You sound a little tired. Come on, it's only 1:38 in the morning, 2:38 where you are. It's a Friday night, and you're a college professor. You probably just rolled in from one of the bars.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe not. It's not how it worked. How are you? Thank you for waking up. I know you sound a little groggy, like you had just passed out.
I'm up.
There's an intruder outside your house in a mask. How fast will that wake you up? That will wake you up fast. By the way, everybody's texting. It is from The Exorcist. Was there, Dr. Ashley, do you know, was there a famous song from Halloween? Just look up Halloween theme song, because I think there's one from that,
there's
too.
There is a famous Halloween theme song.
Okay, we'll play that next. How are you this morning?
I am well. Thank you. How are you?
We're doing good. Why are we so enamored at this time of year with scaring the snot out of ourselves? I know Halloween has always been a time to dress up and be scared. Or was it not always a time to dress up and be scared? Is the Halloween movie came out in 78, so I was only 7 years old. So I never knew otherwise. But was Halloween previous to that movie more of a not-so-scary time? I imagine that it's been horror as much as dressing up for a long time, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the Halloween's one of the pagan celebrations, you know, and so Halloween goes back a long way. And I could probably say things that I'm not really entirely sure about. But, you know, Halloween is one of those important things that's wrapped all around and you know, pagan celebrations. So Halloween stands on its own. But Halloween the movie definitely, you know, started something new in 78 and has a special place from there on out, most assuredly.
And as you've said in some writings that I have, you know, they've made a lot of bad sequels and remakes. And Jamie, the one that came out today, Jamie Lee Curtis is back in. It's 40 years later. This is a direct like sequel. They have some Halloweens that weren't sequels and some that were, of course, Halloween 1 and 2. Jamie Lee Curtis was in both of those. And then I think she's been in another one since then, like the 20th year or something, right? This isn't the first time since the first two that she's been back in one, is it?
Yeah, she got roped into another one, and I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it didn't go well. I know that. I know that for sure. And she actually asked to be killed off. So I think when you ask to be killed off, it's pretty bad.
But yeah, you know, here she is.
Especially like Jamie Lee Curtis. I think when you ask this, can you please just kill this character off, things aren't going so well. But this one definitely did.
Yeah.
It went very well, and it was kind of like, okay, we're just going to pretend that nothing happened. You know, between the first Halloween and the one that came out in 2018, we're just going to like okay, none of those other movies happen. Like, we're just going to go straight from that one to this one. And she's super excited about this one and really happy to be a part of it. And I've seen some interviews with her that you know, she's really excited and really happy about it.
You haven't already seen it, have you, by any chance?
I did.
Did you get to see a special screening, or did you go out last night or the night before, or when did you see it?
I went out, well, the tonight, last night, whatever you want to call it, yes, I made sure that I made sure I knew what I was doing before you guys, before I talked to you guys. So, thanks for that. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Now, the review in the Tribune from Michael Phillips only gave it like 2.5 stars. Would you rate it higher? You said that you thought it went pretty well.
I thought it was good. I mean, it's a horror movie. It's a, you know, slashery, you know, jump scare.
Right.
You know, everything you would expect out of a horror movie. I mean, there's no heavy intellectual subtext to it. I mean, there is some subtext to it, which we can talk about later, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's good for what it is.
Don't go in expecting too much. Expect to be scared, and then you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely.
What is it about Halloween and being scared that we like so much, though? I know that, you know, it's a pagan ritual, it's whatever, but we're not all pagans. We don't think about that. We just know it's a day that we get to dress up. And I think there's a couple, it's interesting. Halloween is a couple of different things, right? When you're young, it's a time to dress up and go to parties and like, and it's very interesting, separate from the movies at all. It's like, there's a weird thing with these costumes where it's this, it's kind of like Halloween is this get out of jail free card. You can be whoever you want for one day a year. You can dress, you know,
right.
We have all these, we take every possible thing in popular culture and make the sexy version costume for it. So it's like this one day that you can go be, you know. You remember the Handmaid's Tales one got pulled from the catalog earlier this year, but I did see somebody had put online the saddest costume ever they tweeted, and it was sexy avocado. And it was a weird, like, slutty avocado outfit. And it just didn't make any sense. But it's like they'll take anything and turn that into. So there's that. There's when you have kids and they want to go out and trick or treat. And then there's, like, just this, I want to be scared. And scary movies come out, and you know, the TV channels are running these fright fests. Why is it, do you think, that we like being scared? Because it's unpleasant when it happens, for the most part. Some people just really enjoy it, but a lot of us sit there kind of with our hands over our eyes, half watching things, and then have nightmares. And afterwards, you're like, why the hell did I just do that?
That's a very good question. And you know, I think, you know, Halloween for kids is fun. There's this sort of like, ooh, you know, and the candy. And it's sort of it's like a creepy, magical Christmas. I don't if that makes any sense. And yeah, I think when you're young, I think back to, like, I'm from a place called Tampa, Florida, and they have
a place called Tampa, Florida. We have heard of Tampa, Florida, Dr. Donnelly.
Yeah,
I'm from a land called Tampa, Florida. I don't know.
A magical land called Guavaween. They block off the sort of the party and bar area, and they throw this giant party called Guavaween on a Saturday night close to Halloween. And it is very much a chance to wear like the slutty avocado outfit and the, you know, and it's absurd. It's just a chance to have a party like any other party. But the scared part is a good question, and there's a lot of answers. And some people just like the fright. You know, you would like going down the best roller coaster ever. You know, you get on and, you know, when you're almost at the top, you're thinking, this is like a terrible, terrible idea. Why am I doing this? And then, you know, you're like, wee, you know, or bleh, or whatever your response is. But then you get off and you think, I want to do it again. That was so much fun. Because it's a, you're safe. Movies, horror movies, and these haunted corn mazes that we have up here, and events that theme parks have, and parties that we have that are scary. They're a safe scare, which means consciously we understand that we're safe and nothing really bad is going to happen to us, but it's still fun. It's still fun. We still get that sort of adrenaline rush, and
do you think
it's yeah?
I know you teach cinema studies in some ways. Do you think that the horror film has is it a good part of pop culture, or like when things like The Purge come out and things that are just ultra violent? And do you think that there's some that's like, I'd rather not people really watch this type of thing?
Well, I think generally speaking, and this is really the opposite of what most people would think, horror movies are really some of the most socially conscious movies that we have, because they somehow are the first films that are put out, because horror films are generally cheaper and faster to put together than other genres of film.
Yeah.
And movies like The Purge are extraordinarily political. And they say a lot about our country's fears and our country's concerns. And people go and they, you know, they relate to that. Some people on a conscious level, some people on a subconscious level. And then there's some people who I think just enjoy it for the fun factor. And then I think there's some people who actually watch movies like this. And I always joke that, you know, movies like Zombieland and zombie films are like taking notes, you know, in the cinema. Going, okay, this is not what to do. Like, what do I do if the purge happens? Like, you know, thinking, okay, how do I keep myself safe? How do I keep my family safe? Because we're very much a nation of people who, you know, how do I not get slaughtered? We're really into that.
You know, it's very,
you know, when you watch the news.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because with the whole zombie phenomenon that we've had the last 5 years or so, right, with The Walking Dead and all the movies that were coming out about zombies. Like, I know people, I literally know somebody whose husband or uncle or something has built a shelter and is stocking up. And I literally, like, talking about if a zombie apocalypse happened. And these are what would seem like sane people. And I think that literally there are people in America who either maybe think, well, there'll be a war, there'll be a nuclear bomb drop, there'll be some type of thing that leaves us, you know, without everything. And some people have shelters and rations and things like that set up. Do you think that that is
mm-hmm.
normal, or do you think that is very odd that people would think that that could happen?
It's become normalized. I think it's weird, but okay, it's totally become normalized, especially young people. If I ever get really bored in class, I'll just ask my students, okay, how many of you have a zombie apocalypse plan, just out of curiosity? And they'll all raise their hands. And I'm like, well, please tell me, because I don't have one. Yeah. And, you know, they all have ideas and plans. You know, they probably don't have like stocks and, you know, canned goods, and, they're students. But, you know, they know what to do. They're like, well, you know, you would obviously get on a boat, right? because how many times have you ever seen a zombie swim? And I'm like, that's genius. Yeah, so...
No, I thought one of the movies... Wasn't there a movie 27 Days Later? One of them, doesn't it end with them on a boat and the zombies getting to them? I swear there was.
Possibly.
I don't...
Yeah, and see, and then they fight about it. And it's, you know, and then I'm like, okay, well, we definitely need to get back on track. But yeah, they all have plans. It's fantastic. Where are you going to go? And... what kind of weaponry would you use? And I have a theory, like, you definitely need to use, like, a reusable weapon. You know, guns are definitely out because you're going to run out of ammunition. Exactly. You got to be practical.
Well, now, do you trust the kids in your class when you're looking at them and they're telling you their plans? Do you think, God, these kids would just have ramen noodles and beer and they die in 2 days? Or do you think they'd really, truly pull it off?
Yeah. I do.
So you're, not hunkering down with any of them, are you? You're like, the zombies will eat them because they don't know what to do. I'll survive this.
Well, I don't know. They're faster than I am.
Well,
but if they have a good location, I always try and make a mental note. You know.
So you have thought about this. You have your plan, too.
Yeah. Where's your uncle's cabin again? You know, it's kind of that kind of thing. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
See, I think I would avoid cabins. I don't know that I would want to be in a real isolated area. Like, because you're there and you're away from things, but then you still got to get stuff eventually, right? I would board up the Jewel. I would try to lock myself in the grocery store. You could survive for years in the grocery store. But the bad part is everybody else is going to try to come
there. Yeah, we had a conversation about Costco being like sort of the ideal location for a siege.
It would be.
Yeah.
But then the problem is everybody else would think the same thing. So then instead of fighting zombies, you're fighting with other people. I mean, what do you think would happen? What do you think the social, like, how would we function as a society? You know, a big part of The Walking Dead, and I think why that show was so good for so many years, I think it's tailing off now, is because it wasn't just about killing zombies. It was about how we then would interact with each other. And would we pull together, or would it kind of become every man for himself? And I think if you went into a store, you wouldn't tell everybody else, yeah, come on in. You'd be like, no, I'm taking this. You go somewhere else. And then suddenly the humans are killing each other instead of, you know, concentrating on the zombies.
Yeah, you're probably right. We're not very nice to each other. And I don't think a zombie apocalypse is the time to really learn and come together.
You don't think that would... see, I wonder, though, because I've often said that, like, I think that, like, what could finally pull the world together? How could we're all separated by ethnicity and religion and all these things that seem to divide the world, right? But I wonder, and this is going to get deep, Dr. Donald, if we found out that there was actually real life on another planet, or if we came under threat from something, would the world then kind of pull together and realize, hey, we're all the same, and this is a bigger concern than our petty little crap on our little marble out here?
Would we, or would we start chucking other people in front of us? You know, like...
That's a good question. I don't know. But
you know, he has better stuff. You know, I kind of wonder, you know.
So you don't have much faith in humanity. You think we'd still just throw each other under the bus? And...
I think I haven't met very many nice people. But that's, you know, that's a bitter take. It could go either way.
Well, we'll have to hope for the best. We're running out of time. I've got to let you go. I thank you so much for getting up early with us. We really appreciate it. Let's talk again, okay? I'll try to do it at a better hour for you.
I will, but I will say it's worth going to. It's a very different Halloween from the first one, but it has a lot to say, so I'd recommend it.
Excellent. Dr. Ashley Donnelly's at Ball State University. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you have a great morning. All right, 1:56, we've got news coming up in a couple of minutes here on 720 WGN. You know, sometimes at 1:30 in the morning, and it's 2:30 in the morning where you are, it's a little tough to regulate on your Friday night.
Sure.
And it's very kind of people to be willing to get up. So all you texters being so tough on my guest, I don't know, maybe maybe she had a really long day and she was tired.
You know, she's got classes. She's in school all day long. This is Friday. She's probably got a ton of essays to grade. She's probably fell asleep with her glasses on. And,
yes.
And you, yes. Seriously. And plus, she went to the movie.
Yes.
So she had to squeeze that into her schedule in order to be prepared for you.
And frankly, I'm guessing she walked by. It's a college town. She got a contact high just walking to the.
Well, you get dry. Where is she? Florida?
No, she's at Ball State.
Oh, Indiana.
She's in Muncie.
Well, every other building. Never mind.
There you go. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Battis from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. That's next. Kim Bellowak's in studio after we do this. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by North Shore Wine and Spirits Festival.com. Here's Roger Battis. Hey. Jeff Bellowak here on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up late with us, everybody. 2:08 in the morning. That song by the Red Hot Chili Peppers is called Snow. So Jess is sticking it to me now. Kim Bellowak is in studio with us, joining us on the air right now. I was complaining because Roger said in the forecast there is rain and some snow tomorrow.
But it's supposed to be nice by Sunday.
Not till Monday, I think. Oh. Roger, you want to give us a quick update on that?
Sunny on Sunday but and a high near 48, so it should all be melted away and dried off.
Yeah, but...
It'll be good painting weather.
I don't know about that. 48's a little rough, but Monday it's going to get up to like 55, 58. Right?
58, and so mostly
that's
sunny.
That's going to seem gorgeous. We'll be wearing shorts on Monday.
Well, speak for yourself.
Well, okay. Well, I've got the legs for it. I'm sorry. Kim Bellowak is in studio for us. Who are you writing now for, Kim? Who do I say? You're writing a little bit for everybody right now, right?
Well, first of all, I love that you always give my Twitter name a shout out.
Yes. Did I just call you Kim Bellowak? At Kim Bellware is in studio with us. Her Twitter handle is at Bellwack because it's... The first, like, five letters of her name and then her first initial.
Yes, you remembered.
But you know what? I was thinking about it earlier today. I'm like, I always tease her about it. Why is she Bellwack? And then I figured out. But why did you not just do your whole name and then Kim and K?
It was because back when Twitter had a shorter character limit and back in the day, they included your handle as part of the characters. So you had 140 characters minus the length of your name.
So you would keep it
a
shorter.
So was the
R and the E got robbed out of your...
Yeah.
But did you like the way because it kind of sounded like Bellwack?
Yeah, I figured I was like, it's short enough. And no, you know, it was available.
Was Bellware K taken?
No, luckily every Bellware in the world is family and none of them are on Twitter.
Are there no other Bellwares you've ever found in the world?
I have a cousin in New York who is on Twitter, but nobody else is. My brother is a lurker, but he really goes, I think, just to
see what other people are writing.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So, yeah, most recent story was for Vice about the youth reaction in Chicago to the Jason Van Dyke verdict, and I have some work forthcoming that I did about elections with City Bureau, the Civic Journalism Lab, which just celebrated its third anniversary yesterday with its annual soapbox ball, and Chicago Magazine, still doing things there, have some work forthcoming, also had something out about the new do-gooders, so I profiled a few people and organizations, Appalachian, Recipe for Change, and all of a sudden I'm blanking on the third one, which is
okay.
Terrible.
That's a lot. No, you're working a lot for a lot of different people, I imagine.
Yeah.
So I saw you tweeted about the governor's race and the mayoral race this week, so I wanted to bring you in and talk to you about that. But let me ask you about the Jason Van Dyke trial, because I had a client coming to town that Friday. I was picking him up at Midway and then drove into the city. And actually, it was kind of right downtown as the buses were leaving the courtroom and stuff. We listened to the verdict live here on WGN Radio, and it was kind of a crazy time. And it was interesting because the city was really prepared for a lot of craziness and protests and possibly violent protests to happen. It seemed like there were a lot of police on duty and a lot of talk about, and there were some stories afterwards, or some talk on Twitter and things like that about is the city perpetuating something by preparing so heavily as if a group of people will protest or riot or burn the city down if they don't like the verdict.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting way to look at things, like, well, is it the city's responsibility to be ready for that or be prepared in some way, or are we creating a self-fulfilling prophecy if we do that?
I think it's a really fascinating and important thing to discuss. So strap in, listeners. I think a lot of things are true at once. it is not something that is, you know, there are no neat narratives in Chicago. I talk to middle-aged, you know, older folks on the West Side, black residents who were truly terrified of not expecting, you know, violent protests or anything, but very, very worried of the prospect because they lived through the riots that devastated their neighborhoods, which had not come back.
Yeah.
In other cases, I think there was probably a lot of fear and stuff that's not always very well placed. And something, I mean, I guess I like have to kind of put the white folks in the audience on blast for this, but something that it came up during the Serena Williams issue with the US Open a while ago. And there was an Australian cartoonist who drew a caricature of her. It was like very racist. And he defended it as, you know, this is how she looks. She's just so big and, you know, she's just so muscular. And someone pulled up a photo of her side by side with, you know, her competitor. And she really isn't that much bigger. She's like only a little bit taller, like maybe a little bit, you know, more muscly. And someone said, you know, in this case, like the black woman of a white person's imagination is never as bad, is never what they think it of their imagination, is never reality. And I think that's kind of true, too, because there was a lot of, you know, bracing for, you know, violence, for unrest. I think people accurately knew that there was a lot riding on this verdict. There was a lot at stake and it was extremely emotional. But a lot of people, I would single out Natalie Moore at WBEZ, who, you know, does a lot of reporting on the South Side. You know, she noted that the city hasn't had a riot in 50 years. When the videotape was released in 2015, all of the protests, while intense, were peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, there were the arrests were the kind of things that you see for any kind of demonstration, you know, trespassing and minor things like that. On the other hand, if you are the mayor, if you are the, you know, police superintendent and you underprepared and something does go wrong, then you are just, you know, they already have enough problems going on. They wouldn't need a, you know, a PR disaster like that. So, I mean, I don't know what the best way to manage that would be, but I think that point that you made about maybe perpetuating it, I've seen that at protests a lot where, you know, the presence of police out in such force, especially
when they're protesting police.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what it's about, then the presence of police, while necessary, possibly in some way, just because people are walking through the streets, it does come off that way, whether it's intentional or not. That just is a little tinder to the fire.
I will say, to the CPD's credit, you know, they were mostly in uniform, some were in plain clothes, a lot of bike patrol, a lot of foot patrol. Much better and much less, you know, not ratcheting up the intensity if you had them, you know, compared to if you had them
in shields.
Yeah. You know, that would have been just, ugh, that would have been bad. So I think, I mean, all things considered, you know, it was peaceful. The protests, you know, were for, you know, solidarity and to call attention to the issue. But it was also very different. I was outside the courthouse when the verdict came down.
Mm-hmm.
And people I know who were covering outside City Hall, where there was, I think, a larger cluster of people, you know, very different. Outside of the courthouse, I was actually surprised at how muted the reaction was. I was expecting this explosion, you know, like jubilation. And I think one of the reasons that didn't happen is because at the end of the day, if you were on the side of hoping for a conviction, it doesn't change the calculus that Laquan McDonald is still dead.
Yeah.
You know, what are you celebrating? And that was kind of what I got at with my story with Vice when I was talking to the teens, because a lot of Chicago's youth have been working and organizing with, you know, restorative justice. And they're very against the, you know, kind of prison system and criminal justice system as it exists. So on the one hand, they want accountability for police. But on the other hand, they admitted, some of them said it was really hard because rooting for Jason Van Dyke to go to jail means that we're also rooting for a system that we have acknowledged is broken and isn't good for anybody. So a lot of complexity there.
You know, I wonder, with the muted reaction, I think it was also very difficult to figure out exactly what was going on as it was being announced.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a very complicated reading. First, the judge is explaining, you know, second degree does not mean it's lesser. It's just, you know, and he explains that. And then they start reading, and then they're reading on every count on the 16 shots. And so I'm like, you know, a minute in, I'm like, wait a minute. Did they say guilty on the first shot? Because maybe they, you know, and the guy in the car is like, yeah, they said guilty on everyone. So as you're listening to it, you're kind of like trying to figure out exactly what is going on here. And then what does all this mean? you know, will he for sure get sentenced? Or do these run concurrently? Like, how does this all work? So I think it was kind of hard to figure out exactly. You knew he was guilty. And so there was, you know, it's weird because there was relief for me, like, as like I felt that, you know, this is what the verdict should be. But I think I was also relieved that, okay, the city will be fine. And yeah. So that's this. And is that, you know, it's interesting. So here I am, this white guy who grew up in the suburbs, and I'm not around a lot of black people. And, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, there is, I wouldn't say inherent racism, but there is an inherent fear of each other, I think. There is. That's just out there.
That is one of the biggest problems of segregation in our city, is that, you know, your imagination is always going to fill in the blanks. If your neighbors, yes. if the people you, you know, encounter in where you go grocery shopping or where your kids go to school, if your neighbors aren't different than you, your mind has to fill in the blanks of like what they must be feeling, what they must be, you know, how they must be reacting. So it's so apparent whenever I go someplace else and come back to Chicago, it's like, this really is a... We really messed this up.
Do you really feel like this city is way more segregated than other places you go to?
If I go to someplace like New York, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in my hometown.
New York is almost like one I feel like we got to throw out of the mix.
Yeah, like an outlier.
Because it is really the melting pot of the world. I mean, everything just... But like, let's talk about L.A. and Atlanta and like compare it. I feel like then we'd have more of a...
Yeah.
Okay, how do we really measure up against other major metropolitans?
I don't know. I still feel it, though. And I think some of it, it's as simple as, like, you know, if you ride the red line, you really see how stark these divides are. I mean, who's getting on, who's getting off, I think that should be a good Chicago 101 for anybody, whether you were born here, you just moved here, ride the red line from Howard to the Dan Ryan and get a full sense of like how the city is north to south.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true. Let me ask you about the protests that were going on during the trial.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting because here we have the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, in a sense, this is where justice happens. And whether or not Van Dyke would be found guilty, he faced a trial. There was a prosecution. There was a defense. But when there were people protesting during the trial, I was kind of like, it's very interesting because I understand they want justice, but and maybe it's just viewed as the system is flawed because most of the times in major cities, we've seen this with many other cases where the police officer is not found guilty. And then there is a great deal of anger about it. But I was thinking about it like, you know, this is the justice part. And we have to get to a point where when it gets to trial, we kind of accept what happens. I didn't pay enough attention during it. And I think the city and Rahm got very lucky in the fact that there was so much else going on nationally during this trial that took the heat off of Chicago. What was the makeup of the jury?
So that was one of the really big, contentious things. So during jury selection, the jury had one black juror on it. It was the one thing that's kind of awkward is that, you know, reporters were not able to talk to the jurors. Mm-hmm. So there was something, I was talking to Patrick Smith at WBEZ, who was covering the trial, and he admitted there's something kind of gross about having to guess people's, you know, race by just appearance.
Right.
But the jury was overwhelmingly white. There were a few, I think there were maybe, I can't remember exactly, but there was a few Latinos and I think one Asian person on the jury and one black juror. And Cook County is just slightly whiter than the city as a whole, where it's roughly a third white, a third black, a third Latino. In Cook County, you know, where the jury pool is drawn from, it's a little closer to maybe 25% rather than a third. Mm-hmm. But I was talking to a friend at the state appellate's office, a state appellate lawyer, and he said that's actually pretty common. Black jurors, black men in particular, are really underrepresented in jury pools. And a lot of that has to do with,
voting registration,
voting registration, permanent address, who's incarcerated, things like that. So, we can see the impacts even of, incarceration rates of certain groups. Like those people are not part of juries.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I didn't know the makeup of the jury and I thought, there would have been a fair argument that, boy, this was not a really representative jury then, was it? But if it would have been, say, three or four African-American people and then a good cross-section of the city, and then he would have come back not guilty, how would we then justify if we were very upset about it? Would we say that's BS? How could they have done that? Or would we say, okay, this is a representative of the city, and they sat and listened to it all, and they had their reason to come. You know, I wonder how we would have digested that.
I think people would have zeroed in on who the holdouts were, because it only takes one, you know, to not get that guilty verdict.
Yeah.
I just had such a strong sense. I mean, because I was following this case just on top of it. I was at court some days, but doing a lot of watching from home. And I think everybody did a great job. You know, all the local reporters did so well covering this. But it just didn't look good for him from the beginning. I think there was a huge emotional hurdle to get over. I just remember when the counts were, the charges were read, someone audibly gasped in the courtroom, because they go through and they say, you know, one count aggravated assault, you know, they do that 16 times. Yeah. And we felt that again when they read the verdict, how long it takes to get through 16 counts. I mean, that alone was just like, ugh, like that seems like an uphill climb. And then, you know, one of the biggest things in, you know, in any self-defense trial, which was, you know, the Van Dyke team's argument was that he acted in self-defense. Juries really want to hear from the defendant themselves if they're claiming self-defense.
Right.
And I think there had, what I had heard is that there was hesitation to put Van Dyke on the stand because he wasn't testing well.
Yeah.
And he didn't end up, his testimony did not do him any favors.
Yeah.
He didn't come off as particularly, I think, sympathetic and forthcoming. And, you know, I think that ultimately had a you know, role to play too.
Now, because I didn't pay enough attention to it, I only caught bits and pieces. How did the defense try to present it? Because in my mind, the problem is shots 15, you know, 2 through 15. I've always argued that, and I didn't follow closely enough, so I don't know everything with it. And I've heard that he said things as they were pulling up that were very damning, like, I'm sick of this crap and, and things like that. But if you watch, I feel like if he would have shot once, even if Laquan would have died, I don't think we have this trial.
Yeah.
I think none of this ends up happening. It's the fact that he just keeps shooting.
Yeah.
And so how did they present that? Did they try to defend just the one shot? Because I only heard the verdict and read just a little bit about it at the time. But how did they try to defend that?
The defense really went in really trying to, you know, kind of dirty up the victim. Make it look like McDonald was...
I did read a lot of headlines that they put Laquan McDonald on
trial. I mean, that was very difficult for a lot of people, too. Like, they were happy with the verdict, but one of the things that was difficult for them is seeing how, you know, this kid who's dead is, you know, his whole... You know, the worst parts of him are brought out, and, you know, even the way the special video that the defense created to show what was, you know, purportedly Van Dyke's view that was not captured in the dash cam. You know, they made him like in all black, and, you know, in the closing arguments, you know, his defense attorney talked about him as like a monster and trying to get them to envision, you know, the horror movie music. And it just, I'm not surprised that worked. But the main argument of the defense was that, they brought in a lot of police experts who could speak to what they hoped would be, you know, convincing testimony on the state of mind of a police officer, given their training, given the situations that they're in. You know, for example, trying to get the jury to understand how quickly somebody who is 30 feet away from you can close the distance if they're running.
Right.
And if they're armed, why that does, you know, why that would credibly pose a threat to somebody, why someone would feel that their, you know, life is at risk. So they really tried to get into the tactical, you know, this is the mindset. But I think, like you mentioned, a lot of the comments that Van Dyke made, you know, saying, like, when he got the call saying, like, well, we're gonna have to shoot this guy, I think that was really damning. Also the fact that nobody else drew their weapons.
Yeah.
And there was a Cook County sheriff's deputy who did, you know, also arrived on the scene, and he testified, you know, for the prosecution, saying, like, I didn't draw my weapon because I didn't see the need.
Yeah.
So I think the defense really was, this is a cop who is just doing his job. He is trained to do this. This is how they react. And then, you know, there's other kind of things too, like, you know, their sense of time and perception is different because of the adrenaline. And, you know, the jury wasn't buying it.
So that all goes to shot one. in my mind. That all everything you just said were arguments for shot one. What did they say about 2 through 16?
They were trying to argue, you know, with Van Dyke saying what his perspective was, which was different, was that, you know, first however many shots, he was still moving. It looked like he was getting up again. The fact that he didn't let go of the knife after he was on the ground, he still posed a threat. So, I mean, again, when you say it out loud, it's like, of course a jury didn't buy this. Yeah. But there was a lot of, I think, just kind of, he didn't come off as a credible witness, but he was saying, he even said of the tape that was made in his defense, that doesn't show my whole point of view. And so he kind of undermined his own defense.
One thing I did hear that I thought was interesting was when he said how he was coming, I thought he was coming at me.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, this clearly shows he wasn't. He's like, that's not what I felt at the time.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. And I could see that as an actual, like, listen, when you're out there, we can watch tapes all day long. When I've got a perpetrator with a weapon and I have a gun and we're in the real life situation, maybe, you know, as I see it now, I see that he wasn't, but it felt to me like this person, and I imagine for all police officers and the heightened everything like that, we can't understand it even by watching video.
And I think that's what they were trying to get them inside of, like, you know, you couldn't understand unless you are in the situation. So take our expert testimony word for it. Yeah. I think the other thing is that the defense and the prosecution never agreed on the shots, as in, you know, there was an agreement that there were 16 fired, mm-hmm. but there wasn't an agreement of, because even the medical examiner was inconclusive of which shot was fatal.
Right.
In some ways, he partially died because he bled out. Mm-hmm. You know, if he'd only been shot once and it didn't get an artery, he maybe could have been saved, even if it were maybe a more critical wound.
Right.
But, you know, there wasn't any accord as to, you know, did shot number 3, was that the one that was like the fatal one, and the rest kept coming. So that's also where everybody was kind of trying to make their argument, which was, you know, I didn't know that the threat was neutralized until like shot 16, whereas other, you know, people said he was down after shot 1.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone's just trying to argue, you know, their facts and their perspective. And at the end of the day, the jury didn't buy what the defense was putting down.
Journalist Kim Bellware is in studio with us. You can follow her on Twitter at Bellwack. Quick break, and then we're going to do the news, and then let's talk about, spanning out of this, the mayoral race and the gubernatorial race. Next, here on 720 WGN. This is Snowblind by Six. I saw the texter asking for this. Now the texters are giving me a hard time and trying to think of snow-related bumps to give me a hard time about my whining about the idea of snow before Halloween. Kim, wouldn't you agree that there should not be snow for Halloween? Shouldn't the kids not have to trudge around the neighborhoods with snow boots on in their costumes?
I absolutely agree, but like also as a, you know, Midwest native who trick-or-treated with layers of clothing and gloves.
But
you know,
it sucked.
Is that a fond memory
of your childhood?
No, I was like the chubbiest ninja / ghost / pioneer girl / night sky. I got very conceptual in third grade.
Boy, you're going to go year by year. You can name every costume you ever
did. I love
did.
Halloween. It's the only thing like standing between us and Christmas coming into stores in August.
That is true. So what are you going as this year?
I, for the past 4 years, have done a buddy costume with my dog. And aww, everything has to be like pretty low stress on her, you know, no colors, sure, no yes, silly hats. So
why no colors?
I mean, like as in coloring her fur or something like that. Okay. No, this year I have ordered a nice Detroit Red Wings patch, and I'm making her a vintage Gordie Howe jersey because she's going to be Cameron to my Ferris Bueller.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to top our Han Solo and Chewbacca or our Scooby-Doo and Velma, but, you know, we've got some good ones.
Well, you put some effort into this.
I love Halloween and I love my dog, so, you know.
Very impressive. But now, so you're not going to parties and bars or things like that because you're not bringing your dog. This is just neighborhood trick-or-treating?
Oh, no, I am going to parties. When I went as Han Solo and she was my Chewbacca, one of the guys at the party I went to, it was a house party, was dressed as a Thanksgiving turkey. And she is a, you know, pit mix, about 55 pounds, and she's very friendly, and she loves, like, jumping and licking and saying hi to people. So she jumps up on this excited turkey man, and the costume is like this gold lame. It has mesh at the top where the head of a turkey would be, and that's like where your eyes are, and then the bottom has the little frilly you know, little frilly cuffs. And so I have these photos of a 6 foot tall turkey man and like a dog, you know, just
trying to get that turkey.
Trying to get the turkey. So it was very full circle.
Jess, did you want to ask something of Kim?
If I may.
Yes.
First of all, Kim, I really just want to be best friends with you because my dog also has a Chewbacca costume.
Oh.
And I'm very excited. And my dog is now too fat that she does not fit in the costume anymore. So I am going to donate the Chewbacca costume.
Okay, well, wait. Let me ask you both. What is the Chewbacca costume consist of? Because our dog, his middle name is Chewie because he is named after... we debated over Bailey and Chewie, and Bailey won. But he's Chewie because I think he looks like Chewbacca a little bit. And I think all he needs is like... the belt. All I want to put on him is the Chewbacca belt.
I made like the little bandolier for my dog.
Oh my god.
Because she's a brindle color. But like that was a good costume. I even bought the Han Solo blaster, which that year I went was a year that one of the Star Wars movies came out, and those were so hard to get. I was angry at myself that I was paying
waited too long.
I probably may or may not have paid a $25 overnight shipping for this stupid thing so I could paint it black. And I mean, I have an on principle, I do not want to spend more than, you know, like $40 on materials for costumes. Sure. So that was a hard one, but you know.
Jess, what does your Chewbacca costume consist of?
It's just a really, it looks like a furry bear, sorta.
Okay, so it is.
I've seen those, yeah.
Because
you have a smaller dog, right?
No, I have two big dogs. I have an 85-pound Burmese Mountain Dog named Sally.
Oh my god.
She's a little fat for the costume.
Don't you just make those dogs go as Beethoven every year and you put the little... What did they
put? The barrel underneath them?
What is in the barrel? Is it rum? Or like medicine?
Roger, you would know this. Roger, in the olden days, when they used to rescue people on the mountains with the Burmese Mountain Dog with the barrel under their chin, what was in the barrel?
It was a liquid imbibement.
Yeah, but was it rum or was it like vodka?
It would warm you up. It would be
a hot toddy.
It would in that weather, it wouldn't be so hot.
Right.
Or
were there ever really dogs with these, or is that just cartoons we remember?
I think it's just cartoons. Because if the dog is running around in the snow with a barrel and someone's following it, I bet you the person following it probably has a bigger barrel.
Maybe.
And would be able to take care of any people trapped in the snow.
But I'll tell you what, if you had your big dog and you went around, because it's like in our neighborhood, we live, you know, out in the burbs, and all the parents walking around with their kids, the parents generally all have a little something with them as they're walking around. So if you had your dog with a barrel and he could, you know, you say hi to people, hey, do you want to
fill up everybody's drink?
Yeah. You'd be the toast of the town.
I always think that my dog needs to do more to earn her keep, and if she can carry my drinks for me, then, you know, that'll go a long way.
Hey, Matt.
Yes.
I saw on Facebook earlier today that Mark Shipper dressed up his dog as a UPS man.
I saw that, too.
Those are very cute costumes.
I like when you see the dogs playing hockey where there's a costume where it looks like they have arms in front, so when they run, they're like have hockey sticks and helmets on and all that good stuff.
Yeah, the UPS one that I've seen is like that because they're carrying a little parcel.
Carrying a package.
Yeah, which I wanted to dress my dog as that for our UPS guy, but just for him because he is the nicest, best UPS man.
That's when you know you're getting out of control, when you are buying specific costumes. Like you'd have you'd end up with 8 to 10 costumes for Alex. He's like, well, the UPS man, I got to do this. But then, you know, when we see the lady who walks down the street with the Dalmatian, if you're a Dalmatian for her, that would be really cute. And then you know that like you're in trouble.
But he's always interested in the ridiculous things that I buy. So, yeah. You know?
The UPS man is?
Yeah.
I think he's hitting on you.
No. It's very dad-like. It's a very, you know, it's a very respectful...
A very respectful
delivery, you know.
What you getting here, Kim?
He was more just like, sometimes you can see what it is. I remember I got an inflatable kayak one year because I've always wanted to kayak on the river, but the shells are very expensive and I don't have anywhere to store them.
Yeah.
So you can get an inflatable kayak. They're surprisingly affordable, even for a freelancer bum like me. And so when he delivered it, he was like, what is this? And I was like, it's an inflatable kayak. And he was like, tell me more. So I'm an inflatable kayak evangelist.
I don't know that I would get in an inflatable kayak on the river.
It sounds...
Kayaks make me nervous.
Oh, because they're so tippy?
Well... It's just like the one person sitting in the thing, right?
Mine is a two-person kayak.
But are you... the way I picture a kayak is like where the body's coming out, but you're kind of surrounded by kayak. It's not like open completely, right?
Mine is
sort of like you get in it, your legs are kind of in it, and but it's
yeah. No, I
think there's a claustrophobia thing for me with those,
where you're too enclosed
a little bit. Like they, it makes me nervous because I'm going to fall over and then I'm stuck in this thing.
There might be a difference between like a kayak, like a skull or like a sculling shell, and like a kayaking shell.
Is it completely open generally? Like just a boat.
I think kayaks are a lot more open, or like it's more of like a capsule shape that you get in, and it's not the kind of thing where you're, it's not like the movie, The River
more
Wild.
Of a racing thing where they're in the thing and they're, you know, racing
where
all the
like
time.
Where like your lap is covered. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. This is not that,
but it's something that could pop at any time.
It
is. And that would freak me out too.
Well, this is probably not going to inspire a lot of confidence in people, but it's an Intex kayak. If you want to sponsor Matt's show, please do that. It's Intex, and I know them from inflatable kayaks, but they are the big inflatable mattress and like camping mattress company. So they do know a thing about
one, because I have an inflatable. I have two inflatable mattresses.
But I think it might not inspire confidence because every single inflatable mattress that my family and I have ever owned has always popped. So you know what though? I've had that kayak and I've taken it on Lake Michigan. I've taken it on the Chicago River.
You've taken an inflatable kayak on Lake Michigan.
Yeah, you stay close to the shoreline. I take it on the Michigan side, not the Chicago side. Okay. I feel perfectly safe in it. You're not riding rapids in that.
I suppose not, but still, I don't know. It makes me nervous. But that's really cool.
I'll take you out. I've got another seat.
Yeah. We would end up, I guarantee you we end up under the water if that happens.
That will not happen?
How do I even get into it? Especially an inflatable one.
Wait,
how are we both getting in this without going over?
We're going to have to take a quick tangent into the wide, wonderful world of Chicago's park spaces. Of the many things that you can do for free in Chicago, there are various, what they called put-in points. Not a lot of them, but there are different put-in points that are free and open to the public around town. So one of them is at, I don't remember the name of the park, but it's the one up on like Rockwell and Belmont.
Okay.
Around there. And you go and it's just that you step down to the dock, and the dock is only maybe 10 inches, a foot above the water line. And you put your kayak in the water and one person hangs on to it while you get in, and then you hold on to the dock while your partner gets in, and then you're off. But I have really been on a, you know, kind of real high with all the great stuff in Chicago, because this summer, in addition to kayaking around, sometimes illegally at private put-in points, because I'm not paying for someone using the waterfront, which is for all of us. Did you know that you can take free archery lessons in this great little hidden spot, like in Belmont Harbor? There is an archery range. Someone who built that park on the waterfront designed an archery range, and it is beautiful, and it is really fun, and it was legitimately the most weird, lovely, diverse group of people I have ever seen in my life, all doing archery.
And it's free?
And it's free.
Arrows and the whole deal.
Yeah, Lincoln Park Archery Club.
That's really cool.
Yeah, once a month. I mean, I think it ends in October, but in the spring and summer, once a month, they have a free clinic, and you can go and learn how to do this. And
all right, back to your inflatable kayak. So you go to these put-in points. Are there any, like, have you ever come down here? Because like, it'd be incredible to do right here on the river by the big buildings and, like, just kind of hanging out and seeing all that.
Yes.
You have done that.
I have.
You have one paddle that you're kind of working back and forth with to move you around?
I have a buddy with me.
Oh, you always go down?
Yeah. I just don't know how the weight would be. I mean, it would be fine, I think, if I had one, because the seat, the, I guess, cockpit, you would say, is one big open pit, and the seats are...
Are you side by side or are you front and back?
We're front and back, and the seats are inflatable, and they have buckles that buckle into the side, and that's what keeps them in place. And then they have like Velcro on the bottom to keep them from slipping around. But I thought it was crazy, but I thought worst come to worst, I can just return it if it was a nightmare. And it was really sturdy. It's comfortable.
And you have a air thing that you blow it up with, right? Because it would take forever to...
Yeah, and I bring it with me. It's faster to blow it up than it is to deflate it. There's two chambers, one in kind of the floor and then one in the sort of bumper that goes around you. I think I can get that thing inflated in like less than 4 minutes.
Yeah, with the machine.
Yeah. So the whole thing is a bag. It's like about the size of a very large carry-on.
And then did you buy actual paddles?
I didn't. That would be the one upgrade that I would do. It comes with paddles. They're perfectly serviceable. But
inflatable
if you bought
paddles?
No, they're okay. They snap together. They come in four segments.
So
for
little...
each paddle is four segments.
They don't work as hard as you'd like if you bought like really spent some money on some paddles.
I think if you spent more money on paddles, they'd probably just be more comfortable.
Yeah.
Maybe sturdier. I don't feel like mine are flimsy, but they're just, you know. They would be more comfortable.
Yeah.
Any rigid kayak would be more comfortable than this, but given the fact that I'm not kayaking every weekend, this was a really good value. And I will pivot a little bit to the other subjects we wanted to talk about. I will not be upgrading to a hard-sided kayak because I did not win the Mega Millions billion-dollar lottery tonight.
Possibly nobody won. They still haven't. I don't know how. We'll ask Roger when he gets back. They still haven't announced. And he's like, well, they're checking the computers. And that makes no sense to me because you should instantly know we had a winner, we didn't have a winner. So I don't understand the delay on this. But they said if there is no winner tonight, it will be $1.6 billion, which will tie the all-time
record. I remember the last time this happened that we went about 3 hours before we actually got a notice from the lottery
officials. So you're promising me before we're out of here at 5 a.m. we're going to know?
I'm hoping to. I've been checking it. I've been refreshing the page like every 15, 20 minutes. And still, the winner results for the draw are still being compiled. Please check back later.
That was, but you know what, Matt? If I had $1 billion, what I couldn't do, I still couldn't afford to run for governor in Illinois.
That's not true. How much have they spent?
They have not crossed a billion yet, but
they haven't even crossed 100 million.
They haven't even crossed
100 million.
But they are both multi-billionaire. Well, Rauner is not a billionaire.
I believe Rauner is a billionaire.
Oh, he is a billionaire.
I believe. We'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they are both billionaires with a B.
Yeah.
So,
but low billions.
They're not billions.
Who is our richest man?
Jeff Bezos?
No, in Illinois.
Oh, he went through a huge divorce.
Ken Griffin,
the CEO of Citadel.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's in the 4 to 5 to 8 range, or maybe it was 4 when they got married and it was 8 when they were getting divorced, because I remember that was...
Oh, yeah.
We're following that story for a long time.
That was Illinois' own Days of Our Lives, like Dallas and Days of Our Lives all rolled into one.
We talked about that a lot on the radio. The stories about that divorce were fascinating.
Yeah. Rich people, man.
Yeah, rich people problems, that's for sure. All right, we have to take a quick break. Can you hang out just a little bit longer? All right, Kim Bellware is with us at Bellwack on Twitter. Is a great follow. You can follow her latest story on Vice. They just go to Vice.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Vice.com and you can see her there as well as many other places. Just search Kim Bellware online and you'll find her. But at Bellwack on Twitter, BellWak. On Twitter, she's a great follow there. And hang out with us a little bit more, 720 WGM. More with Kim Bellwack after we check... You've just changed now. Now you're just Kim Bellwack. You don't even... We've passed it. Kim Bellware after the news. Hear the sounds that matter. The top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by VictoryAutoWreckers.com. VictoryAutoWreckers.com, Roger. This is a good Halloween song. Seasons of the Witch. This is the Mellow Yellow guy, Donovan.
Yeah.
I never heard you got to
pick up. This is like one of his most popular songs.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Must be
the season of the week. Thank you very much. I'll be here if you need me.
Very good, Roger. Very impressive. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Our friend Kim Bellware still in studio with us, hanging out. You can follow her on Twitter at Bellwack with a K at the end. We've been talking inflatable rafts and the governor's race. And I don't know how those go together. Not inflatable rafts, inflatable kayaks.
It was what we could and couldn't afford if we won the Mega Millions.
Is that how we got on that?
And running for the governor is something you can't afford even with $1 million.
Not with a million, but with about 100 million. What are they going to, they've already combined to set a record for the most money spent on a governor's race in the country, I think. Not just in Illinois, right?
Because it was the Brown race, I think, in California that had the record before. I know that's the last state that had the record that Illinois was expected to break because...
So the state that's like more broke-ass than any state in the U.S., more or less, has two billionaires wasting a tenth of their fortunes to run for a job that pays, what, couple hundred thousand at most a year, right?
I think this is the narrative thread of tonight's show is, man, rich people.
I mean, it is kind of crazy to wonder why would you bother doing that? Forget that, because we're never going to figure that out. Let's jump to the Chicago mayor's race.
Another role that the question is, why do you want this job? Better answers for that one, but still.
I think much better answers for the city of Chicago. But, because here's why. In my mind, the state is, it's not your, it's your state, but you're such a part of wherever you live within a state. You know, I think it's hard to say, man, I love this state. Because
do people say that about Illinois?
I don't know if anybody says that about any state.
Oh, people in Michigan do.
California or Michigan? Okay. Well, Michigan is all kind of
weird.
No. I lived in Michigan for a year and I love Michigan. I love, you know, going there. And I lived in Detroit for a while. But I feel like Michigan is more like that's all one area.
Yeah.
It's a big area, but it's one really similar area. Whereas Illinois is, you have Chicago, you have these suburbs, you have everything south of I-80, and then the people south of I-80 say, that's not downstate, and then the outstate says, we're downstate. So it's really different areas.
One thing that I noticed about North Carolina, where there was a really strong sense of state pride and just cohesion of what people think about, not to say that everybody has the same idea,
sure,
but all of the major cities are along the same highway.
Well, that's
east to west from Asheville to New Bern. I think those are on opposite sides of the state. My North Carolina geography is admittedly poor, but whatever direction I hit every major city in, you know, Raleigh, Durham, New Bern, Asheville, Chapel Hill, you know, all that.
Is there also a river that runs along that road? Yeah, I mean, you imagine the way the cities got big in the first place.
Yeah.
There's probably waterways or some.
I don't know, but I feel like all of the cities being on this continuous east-west highway, because it makes it so easy to travel back and forth. People seem to have a lot of experience being in these other cities, where I grew up in Michigan on the southwest side of the state. Upper Peninsula may as well be a different country to us in a lot of respects. And we were felt very different from Detroit, you know, from the Detroit area. You know, we would maybe rep the sports teams, but.
But from the Detroit area, don't you still have a respect and a love for the UP? No?
I don't know. I never grew up there, so I couldn't say, but we just felt that they were so. We embraced them as Michiganders, but they were very different. They are very different.
Yeah.
If you've ever met someone, if you've ever met a Youper, you know, it's
I have friends that go up there that have, you know, cottages up there, and they go to the UP in
it's
the
like
summers.
Canada,
like
Northern Wisconsin, and Fargo all rolled into one.
And pasties,
yeah.
Which I was very confused by at first. What is a pasty? I don't even remember. It's sort of like a little pocket.
Hot pocket type thing, right? It's like a little hot pie kind of thing.
Yeah. But I think Illinois, maybe because it's such a long state that we're so separated from each other, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like in Wisconsin or in Michigan, people, you know, the UP, oh yeah, we love the UP. Nobody's going, oh, downstate, I love downstate. You know, there's no like draw to like, or not that we don't like anybody in different parts of Illinois, but we're not like, oh yeah, I love going down to Carbondale. It's this.
I kind of like that one gubernatorial candidate who wanted to break the state up into three pieces. I'm like, that actually kind of makes sense.
It would make sense, except everybody, you know,
it's a terrible
that out,
right? idea that does make a lot of sense in some respects. Well, then you also look at something that Senator Dick Durbin is fond of saying, something like, the southernmost, in some parts of Illinois, you are closer to Arkansas than you are to Chicago.
I'm sure.
Was, you know, his thing to discuss how, you know, diverse the state
the
is. You know, Illinois, in like the very broad sense, you know, is considered a blue state just because our major population center, you know, leans, you know, always goes reliably blue.
Yeah.
But that is, if you said Illinois is a blue state, it really just glosses over all of the complexities of.
Well, when you see those maps of the U.S. and they do the county by county, red
then
and blue,
and
there's just like four dots of blue across the country, like, whoa.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people packed into those little areas.
Right. And, you know, when you think about in the part of southern Illinois, it's really close to St. Louis. You know, they're closer to Missouri. They're closer to Louisville. Chicago feels very far away and probably culturally, you know, values wise, just very different too from them. So I understand the disconnect. Illinois is it's an interesting state that way. I think we're, you know, we've got an interesting thing going on. But why you want to be governor of that versus why you want to be just focus on Chicago? I mean,
or just focus on philanthropy or something. I think that you could do so much more good with your money than you're probably going to do running a state. And it makes me almost question, what is your reason for wanting to run this? I have a hard time believing that, well, I have all this money, now I want to give back. I really think I can. It just doesn't feel, I don't know.
I think maybe it's because they can. You know, like, what are you going to do? You don't need to work to make money. You have already, what is your mark going to be? I mean, is this a legacy? Is this an ego thing?
Okay, so if it's that, why not run for Senate? Don't you feel like that has more cachet and you're on a national stage but still representing your state and there might be more really, you know, the committees you could be on and all those? To me,
I think Senate
that would be much sexier than being governor.
But I think Senate has always been more of a competitive job than, I mean, depending on what state. You know, it's still, Senate is still the most prestigious role in, I think, in government apart from president. What used to be a prestigious role.
I think that sounds right. Absolutely. But within a state, there's two of them. I mean, you're still running just against whoever's living in that state. And I don't know. I think that, so we've got Senator Durbin that's been there forever. Tammy Duckworth just got in not that long ago. I think it's not like a state where you go, well, it's impossible to ever get elected there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, Durbin's there until he decides not to be. It seems like he'd have trouble getting knocking him out. And Senator Duckworth, I would assume, will be the same way for a while. But I would think a few years ago, you could have ran when Tammy Duckworth was running. You could have jumped into that race.
Yeah.
And with $60 million, had a pretty good shot.
I think of it as, you know, maybe depending on running for governor of a place like Illinois or California, Texas, kind of a different beast. But, you know, if you have the choice of being the governor of a state like Rhode Island versus being a senator, where even though you represent a tiny state, you can be very influential in national politics.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I think the office of governor is a lot less exciting and powerful. And I think we were talking off air about, depending on what the makeup is of your House Speaker, your Attorney General, maybe big city mayors that you have to contend with. I mean, look at how much Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio go at it in New York.
Yeah.
You know, the mayor of New York City versus the governor of the state. They really have to kind of dance with one another in states where if you don't have a major metro area, that mayor might not be as big of a headache. But
I think it's kind of the same way here in Illinois.
Oh, yeah. Mayor of Chicago is completely, you know, could be your best friend or the biggest pain in your side.
Yeah, outside of Mike Madigan. all right, so let's jump to the mayor of Chicago real quick, because there are how many people running now? By your count?
It's upwards of 18, I think.
Is it? Oh, my God.
Maybe. It's upwards of 12 for sure.
Yes.
I think 18.
I think you're right. I would go with at least 15. Chicago, I'd meet you halfway there.
Chicago Magazine is tracking and doing their own kind of power rankings, who's up, who's down this week.
Right.
And I think last week the count was, I think it was 18, because they're counting everybody who is declared, including the candidates, like the perennial candidates that never get any press coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So they're counting everybody who is, you know, officially.
Who's officially out there. So Chance the Rapper came out this week and endorsed somebody who I know there's a lot of names, but somebody who wasn't even on my radar, and I can't remember her name.
Amara Enya.
Amara, okay.
Yes.
And she, and as I'm reading about her then because of this, is a very interesting background and very interesting thing she's been doing. She is currently, I don't know. She holds a position right now, right?
She is a lawyer. She's an attorney. And she works, I'm blanking on this, I just was looking
I
over her bio.
I thought she had an elected position. She doesn't, because she's done some really interesting work.
She's done quite a few things, and I can't believe I'm blanking on this because it's maybe too late at night for me to remember. But my colleagues covered her when the last mayor election, because she ran against Rahm, and then ended up dropping out to back Bob Fioretti.
Mm.
But we figured we would see her again, and we did. I mean, she's rather young. She is the daughter of, I think, Nigerian immigrants. Law degree, has a lot of experience. You're right. I think she does have a health role, some kind of maybe Cook County health role.
Yeah, that sounds right.
We'll get this confirmed for listeners. But I was not surprised that that is who he backed. I thought all of the talk about people saying, you know, Chance the mayor, I think that's stupid. I think that stuff is ridiculous. And given the stuff that he has been promoting, it was either going to be a voter drive or an endorsement. And it turned out to be an endorsement, which is, you know, certainly interesting. I think, you know, in Chicago Magazine, they talked about his endorsement being a big deal. I really don't know. I mean, I don't know if it is. He is undeniably probably the most influential Chicago celebrity for the youth vote, which is historically a demographic that does not turn out.
Right.
But if they did, that would be
change things.
It would be a huge turning of the tide. I mean, these younger voters who do lean towards these more sort of insurgent candidates, a lot, you know, further left, maybe more progressive on that spectrum, in the vein of, you know, the Carlos Ramirez Rosas, you know, democratic socialists, that kind of thing. If they all showed up, they could get the candidates. I mean, in some ways, we do have absolutely representative government, because who votes a lot? Older people, older white people. And that's why we have older white people in our government.
Yeah.
So if he is able to marshal that attention and really get people to the polling places in November, then that could absolutely have a big impact. Well, I guess for the Chicago mayor elections, we're talking about the in March. March. Or is it February? It's March. Whatever the reason,
why do I think it's in February?
There's absolutely no reason for Chicago's municipal elections to not be the same time as the federal elections.
Well, that must have been done by a mayor who didn't want too many people voting, right?
Yeah, who wants to show up in Chicago in the middle of winter to vote.
Yeah, it's a way to keep things down. Do you think that Chance will stay with this, that he'll actively, now that he's endorsed somebody, will he actively? Because it's one thing to say, yeah, well, all these people follow me, I'm going to get out the vote, but it really is a more of a ground game thing. You have to stay with it and really encourage them and have rallies and things, get people registered. It's not just, hey, by the way, go vote, and then people go vote. I mean, we saw that with Taylor Swift came out politically.
Yeah.
Like 65,000 people registered to vote the next day in her state, which really could change things. But will Chance, in your mind, do the work that really needs to happen to get the young people to vote? Because people might get interested or excited or whatever, but if they don't register, if they don't take the time, if they don't actually go vote, which historically younger people don't do, it's not going to make a difference at all.
If Chance's interest is, I think his interest in doing good for the youth of Chicago is sincere and, you know, has been sustained in different ways.
He certainly donated a lot of money and worked, done a lot of work towards that.
And, that's no small thing, but it is relatively easier to cut checks and, you know, make cute ads and promos and show up for pressers than it is to do. I mean, the big thing that I gave kind of hammered him about is when he announced that he was buying Chicagoist. He hasn't done anything with that. You know, he talked a big game about how the city needed this outlet to be independent, to be representative of the voices that are not often heard from or covered fairly or kind of accurately or charitably in Chicago media. And he hasn't done anything with it yet. He's obviously very busy, and maybe that wasn't a high priority, but the mayor's race has a timer on it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think he's a busy guy that has a lot of ideas and wants to do a lot of things. Does he have the discipline and does he have the plan to, I mean, he said that he, you know, wasn't sure about what was going to happen money wise, because right now, if she's going to stay in the race to a runoff, what she's going to need is money. And he certainly has money himself that he could donate. I don't think it's necessarily fair to expect that he's going to, you know, single-handedly.
No, but he made an interesting comment when he was asked about that. He said, well, I haven't cut a check yet, but I don't know. We'll see. I have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Which was weird to say.
Kind of a weird boast. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we get it, man. We do have a lot of money.
But I wouldn't think he has, I don't know how much he's sold, but Chance is kind of our star, and I know he's national, but he's not Oprah.
Yeah.
You know, he's not, I can't imagine he's got even $50 or $25 million.
I think the last he was valued by Forbes, and this was really based on, I mean, they are pulling this together by all lot of speculative things. I think it was around $10
million. Yeah.
It's probably surpassed that. I mean,
which is a crazy amount to you and I, but to a entertainment celebrity who's being asked probably to donate, you know, he's raised millions of dollars for the city and for youth. So it's not like he's got a lot that he would probably feel comfortable writing out of his pocket.
But he also owns all of his work. You know, he never signed with a label. He controls all of his, I mean, his team, I think they're his people. So he's not losing a lot of money by signing with, I think, a big agency or, you know, a talent group. And, you know, he tours. He has a lot of endorsements, you know, Kit Kat, Lyft, you know, different things like that. He sells a lot of merchandise. I mean, I think you see his hats everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a good, certainly a good businessman.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't know. And who knows what other things are going on. My mom told me it was rude to count other people's money, but she didn't think I was going to become a reporter.
That's true. Not if you're a reporter, Mom, then I have to ask these questions. That leads me back to, we'll go back to right where it all started before I let you go. We're talking about the lottery at the beginning, and we talked about wanting to stay anonymous. And I was telling you that I've read, I believe it's only 5 states where you legally can stay anonymous, and I don't know what the regulations are, if you have to be at a press conference or how they release the money to you. But we talked about wanting to stay anonymous. And I said, well, as a journalist, you would have to be filing the request to, like, try to find out the name, right? And you said that you think that maybe it would be bad karma and you'd back off of that assignment.
I mean, you know, maybe this is bad journalist instincts on my part, but I don't know that it interests me unless that person did something extraordinary with the money.
But I agree that would be interesting, but just the way it would change somebody's life would be interesting to hear about. She's a teacher, she's, you know, she's this or he's that, and, you know, how is this going to change your lives? What if they were already a millionaire and they'd be like, God, that's a waste, why did they win it? But if they were like, you know, I got all these bills and this is going to change everything, then to follow, like, because it'd just be so interesting to see somebody just be handed that. How are they going to react and what are they going to do? And is it going to actually improve their lives? Or 5 years from now, are they going to say, I wish I never bought that ticket?
I think if I knew more about personal finance and taxes and things like that, it would maybe make my brain a little more curious. But for now, I just think of all these miserable looking people on the Illinois Lottery website holding their big checks who clearly do not want to have their picture taken.
Yeah.
And I just think, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure you're going to have every single person that's ever, you know, gave you a stick of gum who's going to come back and ask you for a favor, fund their idea, help their, you know, Kickstarter, you know, anything in the world. And I just think that would make me want to never leave my newly fortified home.
Well, that would be such the sad thing about it, wouldn't it? Is that, like, however much you didn't want it to, it would change your life in ways you didn't want. Yes, you could do anything you want. You'd have all this freedom. But everybody you know and everybody that you love, you'd probably sort of look at a little bit differently. Even though they didn't necessarily do anything, your life is the one that changed. But now you'd have this guard up.
Something that I always wondered about rich people, and I mostly wondered it in the context of celebrities who try to live among the rest of us. You know, if you live in a neighborhood in LA and not the Hollywood Hills, or if you live in, you know, you live in Manhattan in New York and you're recognizable as a extremely wealthy celebrity and you are trying to just be a normal person and go, like, get coffee and read at a coffee shop. Are you expected to give these, like, ridiculous tips? Because do you remember when a couple years ago, like maybe 5 years ago, where there were all these big movies being filmed in Chicago?
Yeah.
You know, like Johnny Depp and Christian Bale.
And they'd report on the tips that everybody was giving.
You could hear who was a good tipper and who wasn't. Heath Ledger was a great tipper. Christian Bale was a great tipper. I mean, of course that gets out. People in the service industry talk. Maybe high-end places, they're going to try and be discreet and they're going to discourage their staff from doing that. But the whisper network of people, you know, if you just tip the customary 20% or, you know, you tip a dollar or two on a latte at a coffee shop, that's like a good tip.
Yeah.
But if you come in your Taylor Swift, are they going to be like, wow, she's cheap?
Yeah.
You know, she didn't drop a 50 in the bucket.
I think you would have a lot of pressure to tip like at 30% wherever you go, pretty much. You'd feel like, oh, they know who I am. I probably. And I think you'd have to, what you should do is think of it as, I get so much for free. Because I imagine
yeah,
a celebrity,
that's
now
a
you're
good
rich,
point.
But you're still getting things for free all the time. So just be a little more generous with the people who are still struggling. And I think what would really be tough is when you get really crappy service and you're like, I would never give 20% right now. This was awful. They weren't paying attention. They didn't care, blah, blah, blah. And then you'd be like, but I, now the report is going to be what a jerk, you know, when we see the reports of somebody who was really cheap.
The in touch story about,
yeah.
You know,
and you wonder,
no tip
like,
and Pippin.
Yeah. Was that person really bad? Or like, were they like, oh my God, they spilled 3 drinks on me and they brought the wrong dinner and it was cold and it had a fly in it.
Now I
and
have
so
a,
that's what I did.
I have a lot of friends in the service industry, some who have worked at, you know, really fancy places in Chicago, bars and restaurants and that kind of thing. And they said that, you know, I don't know what the perception is of how extremely wealthy people tip, but a lot of them say it, what to me was a surprising number, but maybe it shouldn't be, is that a lot of really wealthy people, not only are they terrible tippers, they're terrible because they don't tip at all. And it's because they think, maybe, like in the most charitable explanation, maybe they just don't realize that this is part of what a server's salary, you know, how that gets
so
made up.
So they grew up completely rich and like,
well,
this sounds like
point.
George Bush not knowing how the scanners work at the grocery store. I mean,
or maybe they
terrible.
Think someone else is taking care of it. I don't know. I mean, ugh, just nothing. I mean, that is what dogged Scottie. Isn't that like why Scottie Pippen doesn't go
was
out
that
in Chicago?
Scottie Pippen, was he a bad tipper? Was that the
well, his nickname
no Pippen
was
tipping?
No Tippin' Pippen.
That.
I think it was not now. That he didn't. Someone, I'll have to ask my my friend Ricky O'Donnell, who is a writer for SB Nation and covers the Bulls, who would know. Or, you know, listeners can call in and tell you, did Scottie Pippen get that nickname because he was a bad tipper, or was it because he was a non-tipper? I mean, no tip and Pippin rolls off the tongue
that's
a lot.
That's a great name.
A lot easier than low tip. Well, actually,
low tip and Pippin
is pretty good.
No tip and Pippin, or are you low tip and Pippin?
I mean, maybe. Wow, maybe Scottie Pippin just stiffed every
like,
single.
Man, yeah, well, Scottie's famously had financial problems. He made insane amounts of money, and then I think was suing people because he was broke.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I thought it was Dennis Rodman.
Probably too. But I know Scottie definitely had, I don't know if it was bad investments or like somebody swindled him or what happened or a bad divorce or maybe a combination of everything.
Free story idea. I would be interested in seeing a graph of like how many NBA players by year have, you know, filed for personal bankruptcy or something like that. Because I have heard so many times about these financial courses that freshman players in the NBA are given, which I don't think they were doing in the, you know, in the 80s and the 90s when, you know, guys like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen were coming up. But they definitely do that now where they're trying to, some of it is just to prevent these guys from being broke by the time they're, you know, 30.
And I think, I wonder in the NFL, it'd be even more pervasive because they're such short careers.
Oh, yeah.
They sign one big contract and you have your hangers on. NFL
3 years?
Is like 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years.
Maybe. And a lot of those guys, you know, they're such big teams. A lot of those guys are making $600,000 or $1 million a year. Only a few guys are making the $10, $20 million contracts.
Well, so a friend of mine.
In the NBA, the worst players are still making $10 million
right.
a year. It's crazy.
I mean, a friend of mine from high school was a very successful NFL player for the Packers, Greg Jennings.
Okay.
And he retired at 33. And I was like, that's cool.
Oh, can you imagine?
Can you imagine? I would. I cannot because I am no longer 33 and I am nowhere close to retirement.
And never going to be.
We really picked the wrong.
We should have been 6'4" and very athletic.
We should have been in the NBA. I mean, I would have been in the WNBA, so I would have been making like 1/10 of what you would be making. But
that's true.
Funny you guys should ask.
Did somebody win?
No, but I decided to look because I'm a curious person. 15 NBA players who went broke after retiring. And this is from June of 2017. So the 15 players, Sean Kemp.
He had like 8 children with 8 different women.
$91 million total career earnings. Led the Supersonics to the first NBA Finals appearance in 2 decades. Number 14, Darius Miles, $62 million career earnings. Eric Williams, these are a couple of guys I don't remember, $39.8 million. David Harrison, $4.4 million. That's easy to go broke.
Yeah, I could blow that.
Yeah. Why did that jump from? Oh, okay, never mind. Derek Coleman, the writer wrote, Sports Illustrated once wrote of Derek Coleman that he played just well enough to ensure his next paycheck. $91 million total career earnings. Kenny Anderson.
Can you imagine going bankrupt if you made $91 million?
Yeah, isn't that something?
And I guess, you know, when you don't have money and you suddenly come into money, you probably think, as an athlete or superstar, with everybody just blowing smoke up your rear, that this will always be here, that I'll always make more, that it's okay, or thinking that people are taking care of you. By the way, Kim, 708 texted Pippen. He was a no-tipper. What a wad.
Wow. Oh, not a lot of money.
No.
Eddie Curry, $70 million. He went broke after he retired. Jason Caffey, Antoine Walker, Latrell Sprewell. Remember him?
Former Mount Carmel.
Yeah, $97 million.
Latrell Sprewell, who choked his coach.
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Dennis Rodman, number four on the list. Total career earnings, $26.9 million. You would think
that's
he...
That's all he made?
That's apparently...
Wow. Well, I guess he played in the 80s. And
court documents filed by the lawyer of the of Dennis Rodman in 2014 acknowledged that he was extremely sick and broke, making it impossible for him to fulfill his required child support commitments. At the time, he owed $808,000 in back child support. And number three, Scottie Pippen.
There we go.
$109 million total career earnings. Let's see here. He still wasn't Exhibit A. He once bought a $4 million jet that didn't even work. he then not so wisely invested another million into the jet in an attempt to fix it. It ended up being a $5 million showpiece. Wow. Up until recently, he was stabilized and even thriving financially, but in recent months, this again is over a year ago, he and his wife have been battling in court over the estate as they finalize their divorce. Vin Baker, number two, and Allen Iverson, number one.
Wow, and he went bankrupt.
$154 million.
Huh.
And now you know. That's one to grow on.
There you go.
All right, we have to say goodbye to Kim. Thank you so much for staying up late with us. We really appreciate it. Follow Kim at Bellwack, B-E-L-L-W-A-K, on Twitter, and look for her. Where's the next piece we should look for?
I think Chicago Magazine.
Chicago Magazine, out now or coming up?
Out now.
Out now. Look for Chicago Magazine on your newsstands. It's getting late. Let's do some news headlines, Mr. Badish. 3:44 in the morning here on 720 WGN as we await snow in Rogers' forecast.
It's not going to be that much. It'll probably melt when it hits.
Well, come it's not on. With a 40-mile-an-hour wind or whatever you have coming with
it. Well, let me double-check that for you. I know it's going to be windy all day. You can carry on without me.
I know. I'm looking at my list here of things to talk about. Oh, Sears Wish Book. I couldn't read my own writing.
Oh, the Wish Book, yeah.
I read Scar's Wish Book. What's that?
Who typed that? Okay.
Let's move to the phone lines. 312-981-7200. Joe's calling in from Downers Grove. Hey, Joe, what's going on?
Hey, kiddo. Good listening to you this evening.
I haven't heard from you for a while, Joe. Glad to hear you're doing well.
Absolutely. You too. Listen, this could have been a quote from Mark Twain or somebody else that's, you know, this is a topic that's about, you know, 10 or 15 minutes old. And his quote, if it was Mark Twain or somebody else, was very simply put, a little bit off topic where you guys are right now. And this quote was, let's not get out the vote. And this goes back to, you know, the young pop artist that's, you know,
Taylor
supposedly
Swift.
Said, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And so many thousand people said, we're going to report for voting, if you will.
Right.
My point is, basically, let's vote. Yeah, do that. That's your civic duty, and it's American duty, if you will. But if you don't know who you're talking about, if you don't know the details, just don't do it. Because, you know, It should be based on some fact, logic, and all that good stuff, if you will. If you're not based in fact and logic and knowledge, it doesn't mean a doggone thing.
Well, Joe, that's all I'm saying. How many people that have been voting for 20, 30, 40 years are not basing their votes on logic or facts?
Your point is well taken. It's now, based on them. If I'm still on, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Your point is well taken. It's based on emotion. It's based on what they've heard, what they think they believe. What I'm saying is you have to do the bona fide research to know what you're talking about.
That's what we should encourage. I would never say, hey, if you don't know, don't vote. I would say get out and learn more. Read the editorials in the newspapers. Read the guides. Read from actual news sources, stories about the things you care about, and then figure out, you know, who your vote should be for. But
I wholeheartedly agree. Check Noom. Check. Am I still on?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Check numerous sources and, you know, evaluate the credibility and decide for yourself what is true, what is questionable, and what is, you know, doubtful, and make your decisions based on that. That's all I'm saying. It's, you know, it's just common sense, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Common sense. One of those things is in short supply sometimes in our world these days. Joe, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you hanging out with us here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. Jess, I forgot to tell you this earlier. The Hawks are off to an exciting start. They head to Columbus to battle the Blue Jackets. That's tonight at 6 on WGN TV Sports. Roger, who are the what's our Wildcat schedule for today? I know you've been saying it.
Rutgers at 10:30 this morning.
All right, that's there or here?
There. They visit.
So not playing until noon there.
Visit Rutgers.
Okay.
11 o'clock our time.
Our time so
is
noon,
the kickoff.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's
pregame 10:30. No winners yet.
Still no winners.
Yeah.
I forgot.
I was
to buy
thinking
tickets,
about
so I'm
that.
Hoping it rolls over.
I won't play, but
yes, we will.
That's right.
If
we're going to one
over,
ticket.
Here's the thing.
All right.
If it rolls over,
mm-hmm.
I'll be in charge of it for you, me, and Jess.
Okay.
I'll $6. I'll buy us each one.
Oh,
and
okay.
We split it three ways if we win. Okay.
Got it.
So you guys each owe me $2 next weekend.
Okay.
And if it rolls over, when's the next one? Tuesday or Wednesday?
Wednesday. Hold on.
Powerball is tonight, so that's probably...
Next drawing Tuesday, 10:23, and the next estimated jackpot is pending, because they still don't have a winner.
But we heard, you said earlier, it'd be $1.6
billion. Yeah, if there's no winner, the rollover would be estimated at $1.6 billion to start with.
Now, because we ran out of time... Jess was not able to get our tickets tonight. She bought you and I each a scratch-off ticket.
Yeah, I did.
I heard you jumped the gun and already scratched yours.
Well, I didn't know there was a plan.
We were going to do it live on the air.
I did it. Okay.
But I'm guessing from the tone of your voice, you did not win $50,000.
I got one word. You need a minimum of three to get $3 or something.
So I don't know. So this is
a minimum of... I think it's more than three.
Three words, $3, four words, $5, five words, $10.
Okay.
Six words, $25. Seven words, $100. Eight words, $1,000. Nine words, $5,000. 10 words, $50,000.
Yeah,
scratch
I got
off
word.
Your letters area to reveal 18 letters. Scratch the corresponding letters in the puzzle.
Yeah. Takes forever.
That's a lot of scratching.
Yep.
What do you think the amount of wastes we create on these metallic-y things? So I scratch everything off.
You scratch all the stars.
Okay.
And then on the puzzle below... Whatever letters are revealed in the stars, you scratch the corresponding letter on your puzzle. The square turns to red, a red background, and then you determine when you're all done if how many words you have that are all red.
So on the puzzle in the bottom, I'm only scratching the matching letters?
Correct.
So in my 18 letters at top, I have a T, and then I have the word torch across the top.
So
I'm just scratching off the T?
Correct.
Can I just scratch off the whole thing?
The whole word?
The whole
Oh, yeah, puzzle. Scratch the... No.
Why?
Because they'll know if you turn the ticket into win, they'll look up at the stars and go, sorry, buddy, you don't have an E up here. You can't scratch off the whole word.
So I scratched off the T.
Right. How many other T's do you have on there?
So yeah, I scratch off every T. So right. Are these words actually underneath here?
Yeah, so you scratch the T and it becomes a red square instead of a...
Mine became pink.
Well, pink, all right, fine.
So I have to have... So the word is torch. So I can just look up my 18 letters, and if I have T-O-R-C and H, I would have that letter.
Correct.
But I don't have that word, so right. I know I don't have that one. So I don't have to scratch all this. I could just read.
But you have to scratch the star, all the stars to find out what letters you have.
I have the letters underneath on top, don't I? I scratched off a T, and underneath it was a T in pink.
No, no, no. Look up in the top part where the stars are.
Yeah, I scratched that part off.
All of them?
I have all nine. Yeah, I have
all right,
all
they're 18. All scratched off. All right. Yeah. Do you have any other T's on your puzzle?
Yeah, I have a T in vitamin.
Okay.
T in plentiful.
Then you scratch those.
A T in
all
post.
The T's.
Why, though?
Because you got a T up on top.
I understand that! But if I see all 18 letters and my word is torch,
right.
I have to have all the letters to spell torch to get credit for that word, yes?
Yes.
I don't have a C.
All right.
So I know I don't have torch.
All right.
You're so I'm screwed. Not going to bother with scratching every T. I can just read and see if any of these are going to work, right?
Fine. Then you take the joy out of it.
Ant. I don't have an N. I have the A and the T, so that doesn't work. Penny. I don't have an E. That doesn't work.
Why did you do them all at once? You do one at a time, and that's the suspense.
Oh, my God. This is why it took so long. Roger, I just want the cash.
Did you get any words?
I haven't looked at it all yet. I'll take my time. Maybe I'll enjoy this over the weekend. Drag it out.
Since you're not painting.
Speaking of winning the lottery, Carrie's on from Sycamore. Hey, Carrie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Matt. I'm not buying one of those tickets. That sounds really too complicated for me. The last time the jackpot got so crazy big, Karen County was on with Steve Cochran. And you are correct. I think there's only seven states that allow you to remain anonymous when you win the jackpot. However, there is a way around it that she explained. The first thing you do is do not sign the ticket. That's the first thing people do because they think, oh, my God, if I sign it, then it's all cool. Nobody can steal it. When you sign the ticket, according to what she said, you're agreeing to a contract between yourself and the state of Illinois in our case. And then you have to abide by you must do the appearances, you must disclose your name and all that stuff. What you do is you put it in a lockbox at your bank, a safety deposit box. The next day you go and find a really good lawyer who specializes in trusts. And you create a trust, however you want to structure it, and then it's all set in stone, and then your lawyer is the representative or whatever the word would be, not executor, but something like that, for the trust. And then he's the guy that goes and says, you know, you're following the rules, but the trust is the only one thing announced, not you. Now, at some point, I'm sure that like somebody can dig it up from the financials down the road, but that's what she suggested at the beginning. Don't sign the ticket.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny. I just had this conversation with my accountant today for a long time, and then I read a Forbes article from 2016 when they had the $1.6 billion about setting up a trust, setting up a double-blind trust, and all these ways. And they said that in the end, people can still, if they do enough digging, find out who you are. And,
right.
And the thing I was thinking about, Carrie, when I was thinking about this is the truth is, yeah, you're going to shield yourself from the rest of the crazies in the world, maybe, but everybody you know is going to find out.
Right.
And so you're still
right.
Going to have...
Word's going to ooze out, of course.
You're
right.
Still going to have that situation with people you know who are like, hey, you know, can you... And then you're
my buddy just won $1 billion.
Yeah. Yeah. I just point $1.6 billion. No, I am not lending you $10,000. You know, you're going to feel like a jerk right. Every time somebody asks.
Yeah.
What's
yeah,
the first
so,
thing you
yeah,
would
but
do?
Her advice was do not sign the ticket because then you... Like, if you sign it as Matt Babala, you are agreeing to the terms of the contract yourself with the state, so you got to go through the dance. And then I think this is where, for $1 billion, then we'd have to learn about what Rauner and Pritzker are doing with offshore money. Then you'd have to learn all that stuff to figure out what to do with the money.
Yeah, where are you going to put it all? Yeah. Yeah, because you can't just throw that. You know, I think the FDIC only insures like up to $400,000 or something, right? So you're going to want
to
put this
in
a bunch of various different areas.
For a billion, you'd have to set up like, 50 bank accounts and have it so spread out. Yeah, I think you need to find much more creative things that I don't understand.
Such a headache, it wouldn't even be worth it, would it, Carrie?
No, I'd probably just say no.
Oh, you liar. I'd take it a heartbeat. Thanks so much for calling.
And by the way, Matt, so yeah. If Scotty never left a tip, and I know, and I think the no-tipper guy is right, that's what I've heard as well. If he never left a tip, how did he lose $121 million? That's what I don't understand.
Well, that's a good question, but I think I want to say that it was like somebody took his money. Like he had it invested with somebody who, you know, just swindled him out of everything. There was a very interesting article earlier this year. All right, who was the guy that pitched for a very short amount of time for the White Sox, but he was most famous for pitching for the Giants? Skinny white guy, but kind of had a mean, tough-looking demeanor. He lost all of his money to, like, a preacher, evangelical type of money guy. You know, lost, like, $80 million or something like that. He's trying to make a comeback, actually, was the story. He's going to try to make a comeback later this year after his son graduates high school. Jake Peavy, thank you. Thank you, Jess.
Oh, Peavy, yeah.
Jake Peavy lost, you know, because sometimes you just, you know, you think about it. If you don't know the right people and you're investing and you're trusting them, look at Johnny Depp. There's a very interesting article in Rolling Stone about Johnny Depp, who has lost like $400 million because he's an idiot. But also, doesn't he spend like
$30 million on wine every day or something?
it's something insane, and like won't stop spending money on this and his family and like people he's taking care of. And the lawsuit is very interesting when you read this Rolling Stone article about the back and forth about what he spent money on. And it's crazy to think, like, you just always think, well, I'll do another Pirates of the Caribbean movie then. Fine, I'll do whatever, you know. And like he's got this art and all the houses and just.
Yeah.
I don't know. Crazy problems to have, I guess. All right, did you buy a ticket for last night's drawing?
I do have one. I have not checked the numbers. I'm waiting to hear that someone's Sycamore won. And I gave the bag away. My trust won't mean anything because it'll be me.
Well, they will reveal. And you know what? And it's interesting. Like, you're like, oh, well, I'll just do this and that. But, I mean, you know, there's probably security cameras of you buying it that could get out. You know,
absolutely. Sure. I bought it at a gas station,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, yep. So there's going to be some video that's released of you buying it, and they're going to be like, who is this man who's trying to remain anonymous?
And then I live in Sycamore, so everybody's going to know who I am.
Yeah, totally. When you suddenly sneak out in the middle of the night and put your house up for sale, they're going to be like, that was him! Find him! Right. All right, Kerry, thanks so much for calling. Have a great
thanks,
weekend,
Matt. Take
appreciate
care.
It. You too. All right, Robert's on 720 WJ. Good morning, Robert.
Hey, morning, Matt. You know, real quick, get a Charles Schwab One account.
Okay.
Charles Schwab, actually, they're pretty good people, and they'll take care of you. If you win your $1.6 billion, remember, half of that goes, and then taxes, so what do you end up with, $740 million? I mean, it's, you know, jump change. You were talking about the Sears book in 1968. I was 9 years old, and I wanted the Red Ryder mini bike.
Okay.
And my grandfather gave me a lawnmower, and he said, "There's the lawns." And he gave me a shovel. He said, "Wintertime shovel, go make your own money." And I bought in 1969 my Red Ryder mini bike from Sears, which I still own to this day.
You still own it?
Oh yeah, I've called you before. I own four of my cars that I bought in high school that I still own to this day. But
no,
I love my little mini bike. My neighbors here in Oak Brook think I'm nuts. There goes Crazy Rob driving that little mini bike, But that's the beauty of the Sears. You know, Sears made, I mean, I have all Sears tools, Sears made good quality, you know, period. It's good quality American-made products that Sears always had.
Yeah.
You know, now not so much, but back in the day, you know, I was talking to your screen call, and she was saying that her grandma still has a washer and dryer from Sears.
Yeah.
Sears just... I mean, they produced good quality, you know, and again, it's like 100%. If something broke, anytime anything broke, and I bought it from Sears, you just bring it back and they give you another one for free.
Hmm.
They never questioned back in the day.
Yeah,
that's that. You know, again, that's the beauty of Sears.
Yeah. It was. It was. Thank you so much for the call, Robert. Have a great weekend. I appreciate it. We're running late, so we got to get moving on just now. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by North Shore Wine and Spirits Festival.com. Here's your Roger Badish. I've never heard this song before. I love it. 4:11 in the morning, Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Just who is that? Is that Ben Folds 5?
No, it is Hot Shelly Ray, Downtown Girl.
Oh, okay. Excellent. All right, I like that one. Thank you. 312-981-7200 here with you till 5 in the morning. We'll say hello, I believe, to Orion Samuelson then. And Roger, during Crosstalk, we'll ask him what Max is famous for, and I'll see if he... I won't it away. I'll just see if he says, well, Max, you know, never missed a day of school in his life.
Yeah.
I think that's what he'll say.
That'd be cool.
So
good, then we'll know.
I believe I finished my crossword scratch-off lottery ticket that Jess bought me.
Yep. How many did you got?
Two. Post and bus.
Yeah, you got one more than me.
Everything else needs an E, an I.
It's those vowels that get you.
Vowels do get you.
Yeah.
All I had for vowels was A and O and U.
All I had was a U.
I guess I was just missing, I and Y.
Yeah.
And E. E's the big one.
I told a guy at the counter to help me pick two winners, and he's like, oh, this one.
Go back and slap that guy silly now.
Roger.
Well, come on. How can you deny Jess? But then again, how does he know which ones are the winners?
Hopefully he doesn't, because that's a problem. If he
I know.
What if they did, Roger?
What? If he knew who the winners were?
And he'd buy them himself.
Yeah. He wouldn't be working there anymore. Are you kidding me?
Thank you for the thought, though, Jess. That was very nice of you.
We'll try again next week. And well, we need to figure out how to fund this Ishnala trip and Mexico trip.
Well, if we win the lottery, Ishnala can wait. We'll go to Mexico.
We'll buy Ishnala.
Ooh.
Yeah. How about them apples?
Not for sale.
Well.
Everybody has a price. Is that what you're saying, Rush?
I think so.
We'll just do shows at Ishnala.
Oh, that would be so cool. We got to figure out a way.
We will. Got we'll get to. There. We'll get there, Raj.
Before
We've only
anyone
been doing
else
this for
here.
5 years, we'll figure it out. We've only been on overnights for 5 years.
Yeah.
You're working your way up, kid.
Do it before I got to be in a wheelchair, will
you? Hey, Jess pointed out something good. Hey, we got an extra hour added to our show.
Oh, that's right. True. By the way, next weekend.
Yes.
I already cleared this with Patty.
Okay.
But, you know, Halloween falls in the middle of the week, following week, after next week.
Okay.
So we need to do something with costumes next Friday night, Saturday morning.
Mm.
I will be bringing, if my shipment dates align, I will have a costume. And I will be wearing it next Friday.
So you're telling us that we need to dress up as well?
Well.
I've already got this.
You're all set? Okay.
I have three costumes.
That leaves you, Matt.
Well, I do have a gorilla suit at the office.
Ooh.
So I can always just fall back on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
You should be Scooby-Doo.
As a gorilla?
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, really? How's that figure out?
Like.
He can just talk funny?
Wear a dog head?
No, they have like a full, like a actual costume, but it's really warm. So if it's cold.
Oh, it's a full. See, that's how the gorilla suit would be the same way. It would be very tough to drive with the gorilla hat on. I wouldn't see anything. I'd crash for sure.
Well, you put drive home as the gorilla, and then you can reenact scenes from the Pink Panther.
If I go as the gorilla.
The original Pink Panther.
I'm going to be Jim Belushi in Trading Places.
You could do that too.
Maybe we should make the listeners vote.
For what?
Yeah.
I'm Gorilla Scooby-Doo.
I'm not doing Scooby-Doo.
Where's he going to get the Scooby-Doo outfit? He's got to go buy it.
I will bring you one.
Oh, you got one.
You'll bring me a Scooby-Doo outfit?
Yes.
It fit?
Is it Stefan's? Because he's like 2 feet taller than me, and I'm going to look really dumb in that Scooby-Doo outfit.
No. It's just something cool. You text me what kind you want. I'll send you photos, and then I'll bring it in. I will make it happen.
All right. Well, I think we shall be surprised by each other's outfits. Don't you?
I'll try. I'm really bad at surprises, though.
You'll make it.
Yeah, she's good at that.
Yeah, I think she'll handle it.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to catch up on commercials a little bit, but on a serious note, I do want to talk for a few minutes about the latest news out of Saudi Arabia and how they're handling this now. So Jamal Khashoggi disappears 2 weeks ago.
A little over 2 weeks now.
Already over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Goes into the Saudi consulate in Turkey to get some paperwork so he can marry the Turkish girl I believe he's engaged to, correct? Mm-hmm. I don't understand why he needs... It's so interesting. If you're an exile, if you're not living in your country, what paperwork do you need from them so you can marry this? Why don't you just marry the person? Like, you know, I guess I just don't get... Maybe in Turkey they wouldn't legally marry him unless he had something from his country. I guess that there's... I don't know. It seems like he's going through a process I wouldn't have bothered with. I would have, you know, he was living in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Just run off to Vegas and go to a chapel and just get it done. What are you going into the consulate for to get paperwork? If you're in exile from your country, if you're afraid of your country, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Not to say this is his fault. I'm just saying that I'm surprised, you know, because he knew his life was in danger. What are you doing going into that consulate? Now, maybe he felt, oh, it's Turkey, I'll be safe or whatever. But if he did tell his girlfriend, if I don't come back out, call the authorities, then, you know, he had some fear going into it.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, immediately there was concern that something had happened to him. And Turkish authorities pretty quickly said he was killed. The Saudis denied knowing anything about it. At first saying he left the consulate, then denying having any knowledge. Now they're saying... There was a fight. He was being interrogated. A fight broke out, and he was killed during the fight. And that seems like a story that you come up, you figure out over the course of 2 weeks, how badly do we need to come up with something, and then you come up with something. And the really interesting part of this to me, Roger, is that Turkey came out very quickly, early on when he disappeared, saying he was killed, he was dismembered. We have audio recordings of it there. You know, the stories that came out at first didn't make sense. And Turkey's kind of had to change their tune because at first it was.
Uh-oh. May I interrupt your
breaking Mega Millions
news
story? Somebody won in, I'm going to go with North Carolina.
Breaking news. The number of people who matched all five numbers and the Powerball.
Three.
Zero.
Ah!
The estimated jackpot for Tuesday's drawing is $1.6 billion.
Holy jamoly.
Number of people who matched all five numbers and not the Powerball, 15.
And
each of them win $1 million.
I would take that too.
There was one Megaplier winner. Megaplier is times two, whatever that means. I don't know.
But you can't do that for the whole thing, right?
What do you mean?
Well... If with the Megaplier, you spend an extra dollar, and then if you win, you get like double the amount.
Oh, is that how that works?
So if like you won $50,000 because you got whatever numbers, you'd still get $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't do that with the whole thing.
No, no. I think it's only on the wrong. without the Powerball, okay. Without the magic number. So we had one winner there. They got $2 million. You had 289 winners that had four numbers and the what do you call it? The Powerball?
No, the Mega Millions ball.
Mega Million ball, whatever. They got 10,000 each. You had 6,600 people got all four numbers, no magic number, $500. 19,000 people won $200 each. 437,000 people won $10 each. Make that, let's see, because it's the same amount, $10. Make that $847,000.
Wow.
3,294,000 won $4. How much does it cost to buy a ticket?
$2.
Wow.
Hey, they get two for the next
Hey, hon, look, I doubled our money.
Mm-hmm.
And 8,279,000 won their money back.
Wow.
And that's not doing the Megaplier thing with it, because that just sounds stupid. But, yeah, so that's a lot of people won.
Yeah.
But not the big one.
I can't believe it rolled over.
Yeah. $1.6 $1 billion.
Now, is that an estimate for what they're going to say it is?
That's
next?
What an estimate is. That's what the estimate is
that's
now.
What it will build up. To? Yeah. So you think that will still go up? Before
oh, it
Tuesday,
will.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It, in fact, the last drawing's initial estimate when it rolled over was at. I want to say $700
yeah, it was only
million dollars, and it went to a billion.
So this could go to $2 billion. This could go to $2 billion.
I think it may fall short of $2
billion. But it could.
It could.
Okay. Everybody start making your plans. We got to take a quick break. News coming up, 720 WGN. November 6th, you have the power to influence the course of politics with your vote. Then follow the most comprehensive local political news online at chicagotribune.com/midterms. If you missed it, Roger just reported there was no winner in Friday night's Mega Millions drawing. Next estimated jackpot for Tuesday night, $1.6 billion, which will tie the U.S. record for the biggest jackpot ever. The Powerball had a $1.6 billion in 2016. But if they're estimating $1.6 billion as of right now, that means by Tuesday, likely at least up to $1.8 billion. I was guessing could be $2 billion. We'll see how crazy people get. If somehow it rolls over on Tuesday, it will for sure
break
the $2 billion.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And then it's just getting
easily.
So I will buy for us
for
Tuesday one ticket each. So I'll spend $6. I'll send you guys pictures.
Okay.
So we'll have our set.
I trust you.
I will be buying tickets outside of there.
Outside of
our little group. So I'll buy our three.
Oh, okay.
Right. Which we count as, but then I'm buying separate ones.
Right.
If I went on those, you guys are... Not that I wouldn't take care of both of you, because I would. That kind of guy. I'll still buy you pizza when I'm gone.
Oh, whew. Thanks.
Papa Nino's will live on.
Thank you.
News coming up in a couple of minutes here on 720 WGN. Matt Pavala with you, 720 WGN. We'll say hi to Orion in the morning show here in just a few minutes. So I want to talk more about Jamal Khashoggi, but you were just, Roger, doing that story about the caravan that crossed into Mexico.
Yeah.
That's going to become a fascinating story. In the next week or so.
It already has because Mexican authorities have been trying to stop them coming into Mexico and they have not really been successful.
Well, they tore down a fence at the border. They're letting people in if they have passports or if they're applying for refugee status.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to do that. Trump has said, we're going to close the border if Mexico doesn't take care of this.
Right.
But in some ways, I would say President Trump wants this to get ratcheted up because immigration has played very well for him, and they got the midterms coming up. So this is a good distraction from whatever else is going on and something his base rallies around. So this is a good thing for him.
Yeah, it seems as though it's building up to that.
Well, and this is, here's my question is, once they get to the U.S. border, I don't know how quickly that could actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
But Trump's saying, you know, President Trump's saying we'll send troops down there and close that thing down. If there is a big face-off there, that will get scary. You know, could look very bad, all of those things. You know, the right and President Trump keep saying that Democrats want open borders. And, you know, I suppose there's people that are incredibly far left that want just open borders. I've never heard a politician say they want open borders. I don't think any politicians want open borders. I think they want sensible borders and to allow people in as is necessary. You know, the economy needs a certain amount of immigrants. And, you know, even in the story I'm reading about this right now, immigration's at like a 40-year low, they're saying. So it's not like we have this crazy immigration problem. And President Trump likes to say these are bad people and they're sending rapists and murderers and things like that. Often not the case. Are people illegally doing it? Yes. We need to. I don't think anybody should be just allowed to illegally enter the country.
Right.
Maybe we should do more to make it an expedient process for the people we will allow in, things
there,
like that.
For certain people that the country wants in, there are expedient methods to get into America and stay here for a while to take care of whatever business you're being required to be here for.
Sure. For people getting visas to work for companies, those are higher. if I'm right about this, Roger, and I don't mm-hmm. know if you're speaking of something else, but yes, you can get in the country more quickly if you're going to go work in the tech industry.
Tech industry, or you have a skill in the medical field or in education where your services are highly
in demand.
In demand here,
but
right.
We also have a big demand for unskilled labor, as it's called, which if you watch videos of people picking in the fields and doing the mm-hmm. that work that most Americans don't want to do, that is still a skill, and it's a lot of hard work, but we need all of those people, and Iowa and other places would be suffering if they didn't have the immigrant populations that they have. There is we're going to try to get the author of an article on next week. I sent it just a couple of weeks ago, and I forget if it was in Esquire or Rolling Stone, and I forget who the congressman is, but there's a congressman from California whose family used to own dairy farms there. Mm-hmm. And he's a huge Trump immigration supporter, very hard on immigration, and okay. supported Trump real hard on it. His family moved their dairy operation to Iowa a couple years ago, and they don't talk about that. He does photo ops and things for his political races in California still, because he still has some family that owns some stuff, but he's never really publicly revealed that his family moved their actual operation to Iowa.
Okay.
And in Iowa, they don't promote it at all about the family, about him being in politics, and they avoid it. Jess, will you look up what is the congressman's name who I'm speaking of when you get a chance? And so this reporter was doing the story on it and was being shooed out of town by this guy's family. They didn't want any publicity. They didn't want anything. And there's a huge concern about raids, because the whole dairy industry there is really working with labor that is probably questionable. And if there were raids, would scare people, and it would shut down the dairy industry mm-hmm. in that town.
Well, the nation's immigration policy has been debated in Congress for more than 20 years now, as far as trying to bring it up to the modern times, to try to meet the demand for the specialized skills, for the unskilled labor, and also because of international terrorism now. So there's very fine lines that Congress is walking, and depending on how hard of a line you want to take or how open of a line you want to take, that's where things go. And right now, the Congress and the country is moving towards a harder line against immigration and to make it tougher to get into this country. But keeping in mind, at least for some of those Congress people whose districts require either highly skilled or unskilled labor from outside of the country, how do you appease their needs?
Right.
So again, this is a debate. There's no easy answer.
Right.
And this is going to go on for quite some time. Now, I don't think I've ever remember seeing an influx, such a large influx of people trying to get into this country as we're seeing, and we have seen over the last couple of years, coming in through Mexico and trying to get in through the southern border. I've never seen reports like this. We've got 4,000 people in this group trying to get into this country. It could have grown since those first reports, but that was a report that I saw, 4,000 people. So this is something new.
The caravans are new. People
yeah.
trying to get into the country is not new, and I think people would say that actually people trying to cross from that border are lower than they've been in other years recently, that the numbers are overall down. They had been trending downward a little bit.
And I think they've been down because of the threat by America.
Very recently,
yeah.
But I don't think in recent years. I think when they're down, it's because economies are better in other countries and there's no need. You know, I mean, let's face it, they might be coming here for a better life, for better this, better that, but that's all basically predicated on how is the economy where you are? Is there jobs? Are there security? Can you have a quality of life? why would you pick up and leave? Not just because America's this ideal, but because there is something you need for your family, or you want to escape crime, escape poverty, find a job. All those things are why people end up coming. So if our economy's good, theirs isn't, they're going to be coming this way. If everything's about equal, it's not going to be as big of an issue. I think we can all agree that people shouldn't be illegally entering the country. We should do a better job of processing, of allowing people to apply, and of denying or accepting people based on what makes the most sense for the country. Now, Congress needs to agree on that, but there is a need and a demand for immigrant workers to do a lot of work in this country, and it hurts the economy if they're not here to do it. So, you know, it's interesting in this article, Devin Nunes is the congressman I was speaking of, and we'll try to talk to the reporter. When he's in Iowa interviewing all these people, and this is, you know, people who back Trump on a lot of things, then he brings up immigration, like, well, that's one thing we don't agree with him on. Because they need those workers, and you know, it's a great issue for President Trump, but it doesn't work for a decent amount of his base that need those workers for their economy.
Yeah.
4:46. We've got Orion coming up in a little bit. We'll say hi and ask him about Max, and see if I can win a bet from Roger here before we get out of here.
How much is that? $1?
I think we're on $1 on that one.
Oh,
yeah,
boy,
on $1, and we rolled over our other bet. The population of the winning town
that's right.
has to be 6,250 or less for Roger to win, over 6,250 for me to win.
Yeah.
So a lot of high-stakes gambling going on
hey,
here.
Hey, does that mean that our bet doubles now for that?
Oh, because you want to make it $2 over? Then? That's fine. Yeah, absolutely.
I just asked the question. I did not make
Roger,
the commitment.
$2.
Oh,
you're committed.
Jeez.
You should be. Pepperballer here with you for a few more minutes on 720 this morning. We'll have Orion Samuelson coming up with the morning show here in a few minutes. Next week, is it Daniel K. Hertz who was supposed to be on with us tonight? The Battle for Lincoln Park, or the Battle of Lincoln Park. I've been reading the book. It's about gentrification in Lincoln Park. He'll be with us in studio, I believe, next weekend. He fell ill in the days leading up to tonight, so he couldn't come in. But next week he will join us. And I forget what I was going to say.
Who else is going to be here next week?
Nobody else but us.
Right.
Oh, and if we win the $1.6 billion, let's agree right now, we'll still do the show at least next week, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Hello.
As long as we do that. All right.
Yeah. We'll buy pizza for everybody.
I'll tell you what. I win the $1.6 billion.
Yeah.
I will have a truckload of pizzas here, and anybody can pull up and get a slice.
There you go.
Just like when we promised tacos.
Right.
We'll do that.
That never happened.
Listen to this story real quick before we say hi to Orion. China is reportedly in the process of creating an artificial moon that would be bright enough to replace the streetlights in the southwestern city of Chengdu by 2020. The illuminated satellite is said to be 8 times brighter than the real moon, according to state media People's Daily, and forms part of the country's growing ambitions in space. Chinese scientists plan to send 3 artificial moons into space in the next 4 years, and the moons, made from reflective material like a mirror, are expected to orbit at 500 kilometers above the Earth and light up an area with a diameter of 10 to 80 kilometers.
Wow. That just doesn't sound right.
Why would you want to make the nighttime that bright? You would really mess people up.
Yeah.
Because if you're saying, oh, it's bright enough to replace the streetlights, well, you can't. You wouldn't be able to aim that light just at the streets where you want the light. Everybody'd be living basically.
What about cloud cover?
In daylight.
What about cloud cover? Cloud cover would dull the reflected light.
It would. Just
and
like
I can understand they want to, you know, cut down electricity use and all that. If you have the reflective moons, you don't need the electricity.
But it's not going to be so much to replace. I mean, replacing streetlights, I know that saves electricity, but I don't know. That seems crazy.
And now it's up in the sky, and you got everything flying into it. How far away will the satellites
be? Like a satellite, nothing's going to fly into it.
Oh, there's stuff flying into satellites all the time up there. It's outer space. You don't know what's going to get hit.
I understand, but I think for the most part, if a satellite gets hit by something in outer space, it's going to be damaged.
Well,
Well, that's not happening that often. We hear more about it.
You don't know about it.
Apparently not.
Would they admit, $10 billion satellite just got whooped by a 1-inch piece of rock?
That happens at times.
Yeah.
Not often, though. but it is a growing concern. I know that.
Yeah.
All right. I think he's joining us right now. Let's say good morning to Mr. Orion Samuelson. Big O, are you there?
Yeah, good morning. And I'm going to stay in Air Orion. I'm not going up any higher than that to create a fake moon.
Orion, so SpaceX and all these guys are trying to launch private aerospace travel. I think didn't SpaceX announce like a week ago who the first space tourist is going to be?
They've got, $1 million that they can spend?
If they said, hey, Orion, we have an extra seat, we're going to do an orbit around the Earth, would you go for that? Or would you be like, yeah, I'm going to stay a little closer to home?
No, I think I would go for it trip.
Yeah. What if it was to the moon or to Mars?
No, I'm not ready for that.
No, not that one yet. Okay, fair enough. I think that's fair. Hey, Orion, I had a little talk with Roger earlier in the show, and I was talking about pulling my kids out of school because we have some painting that's got to get done, and the weather's been so cruddy on the house that we haven't been able to do it. And Monday's going to be a nice day, and Tommy's been helping me. I'm like, I might just take him out of school. And he's like, yeah, why not? He said, I bet Max and Orion had to miss school all the time to go plow the fields and things like that. And I said, well, actually, Roger, there's a famous story about Max, and I'm hoping you can back me up on this. Oh.
Okay.
What is Max's claim to fame when it comes to Max and schooling?
I can't help you on that one.
Maybe. I wonder if I just made this up.
I think you did.
I don't think so. Orion, I swear that Max has told the story over the years that he never missed one day of school in his entire life.
Oh, yeah, I think I've heard him say that. Yeah.
Well, then, so he worked on the farm.
Did Max grow up on a farm, O?
Yes, he did. Southern Indiana.
Yeah. And so he would work on the farm in the morning.
Head off to school,
and then come back and work again in the afternoon.
But country schools in my day would start later in the fall so that you could stay home and help with harvest. Mm. And then in the spring, you'd be able to stay home for spring planting. And so, yeah, there were conditions for kids who lived on farms so that they could help out with the chores with planting and harvest time.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. By the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. But first, let's find out what's coming up on the show with Orion.